slow. He's ahead in the race, and it's tough how to go. And your load is so heavy, and your legs want to rest.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly conference call. Today is Monday, August 12th, 2019. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Standard Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question to make make a comment, our call-in number is 605-475-3250, and our access code is 449389#. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, that's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Also, please support our business partners. You can find our banners on the right-hand side of our website, of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save America. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right-hand side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up on our scripture reading where we left off last Monday. We're in the book of Mark. Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. And again, he, Jesus, entered into Capernaum after some days, and it was noised that he was in the house. And straightway many were gathered together, insomuch that there was no room to receive them, no, not so much as about the door. And he preached the word unto them. And they came unto him, bringing one sick of the palsy, which was born of four. And when they could not come nigh unto him for the press, they uncovered the roof where he was, And when they had broken it up, they let down the bed wherein the sick of the palsy lay. When Jesus saw their faith, he said unto the sick of the palsy, Son, thy sins be forgiven thee. But there were certain of the scribes sitting there, and reasoning in their hearts, Why doeth this man thus speak blasphemies? Who can forgive sins but God only? And immediately when Jesus perceived in his spirit that they so reasoned within themselves, he said unto them, Why reason ye these things in your hearts? Whether it is easy to say to the sick of the palsy, Thy sins be forgiven thee, or to say, Arise, and to take up thy bed and walk. But that ye may know that the Son of Man hath the power on earth to forgive sins, he saith to the sick of the palsy, I say unto you, thee, Rise, and take up thy bed, and go thy way unto thine house. And immediately he arose, took up the bed, and went forth before them all, insomuch that they were all amazed, and glorified God, saying, We never saw it in this fashion. That was the Gospel of Mark, chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. Okay, tonight we're going to take a look at the paper we wrote, the Extraordinary Action, and hopefully people will have some questions about it. We can talk about it. It's quite a few pages, so I'm going to break it up in three parts. The way it's written, it's pretty much almost equal to breaking up. The first part is going to talk about the Declaration of Restoration of the Law of the Land and what this action is really all about. We're going to make the point in that part that we the people have the providentially provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary. So the second part, which we'll read next week, will be lay out the systematic destruction of America. And then the third part will be the decision in order. We've been in court in a literal sense, in a sense that we filed a paper to be under the auspices of the court. We filed lots of papers, about 200 documents. There was like 190-some-odd documents, but only about 200 documents. Memorandums, writs of mandamus, revealing the subversion to every level of government here in the United States. We even not only just did it on the federal level, we did it on the state level too, every governor. We've been met with silence, and there's a lot that's been happening. Really, before we even started, there was a lot going on. There was a conference held in Washington, D.C. back in 2004. We the People brought that together to Robert Schultz, his organization called We the People. And it started out in 2001 and then 2004. This was broadcasted on C-SPAN. The government was invited. They said they'd be there, representation from all three branches. But no one showed. And so we laid out the program of the problems with our government, the corrections, and what needed to be done, and they ignored us. After that, Robert Schultz started organizing the next step, which he called forth hang on a minute, let me see if I can find this. No, can't find it. But anyway, I can't think of the word of what it's called. But in any event, it was the calling forth of the people. We sent delegates to Illinois from 48 of the 50 states. And then after days of discussion, came out with details on how this government can be corrected. And that was delivered to all representatives in their own states on the federal level, and also senators, so the House of Representatives and the senators, and also to the governor of every state and to the legislators of every state. And it was done, the delivery of that paper took place in the spring of 2010. I believe the process took place, the Continental Congress, that's what it was. It's the third Continental Congress. And so it took place, I believe it was in the fall of 2009. Papers were written and perfected over the winter. And in the spring of 2010, it was delivered again to all of our representatives within their own states. There was we came together as a group in every state and every capital and delivered the papers in a very formal way. And again, met with silence. And of course, we also delivered a copy to the federal government, to all three branches. Now, we started this step back in 2013. Actually, we were building up before that, but that back in 2013 is when we started to build the process of trying to take our courts back. We filed our papers in the court in 2015. I believe it was December 2015 was the first paper that was filed. And let me think about that. 16, 17, 18. No, it was 2017, I think, is when we opened up a court case. We started filing papers in 2015, serving papers only, not filing them in the court, onto our servant government. We then, in 2016, December 2016, we opened up a court case, and the purpose of really was a depository. It was the beginning of a trial. We laid it out. We were very specific in the paper what we're doing and what we're using the paper, you know, this particular court number for. We filed over 200 papers over the process of 2 years. And now this is the final conclusion of that paper. We're going to open up a common law filing in the Northern District of New York. We plan on probably doing this Wednesday, but we're going to start reading it tonight and again for the next 3 weeks. But we're planning on filing it hopefully on Wednesday. Could end up Thursday or Friday, but it will be this week. And that paper really is the finale of where we're at. We've got, I think, 60 or 70 indictments we'll be filing with this. 60 or 70 or 80, somewhere that around there. I haven't counted exactly cases that we've got filed up there. We've got over 22 documents of evidence. And, you know, we could probably get a lot more, but that's what's been filed in the courts at this point. And we're going to refile all this under the natural law case number that we've created to be filed up in the Northern District of New York. And, of course, it's against particularly two of the three branches of government. It's against the United States Supreme Court and all of the federal judiciary and both houses, House of Representatives and the Senate. We will be copying the president and also copying Attorney General Barr. And we'll be serving, we planned, and anybody who wants to volunteer to help get some of these papers out, get a hold of Jan. You can get Jan at jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, or you can go to our directory, and you'll find his phone number there. But get a hold of Jan and let him know if you can send some papers out for us. We'll give you the instructions, and when the final paper is done, we'll let you know where to download it. And then you would mail out 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 papers, whatever you could do for us. I think we have about 200. I'll have to ask Jan. I know we went through the numbers. Correct me if I'm wrong, Jan. We have about 200 papers we need to file. And we've got volunteers that are going to do about 130 of them. So I think we need a group of people to do about 70 more. Is that about right, Jan?
Yes, that's about right, John.
Okay, so we do need some volunteers. It's each paper cost $7.49 to mail using priority mail through the post office. That has a number on it, so it's got a tracing, and we can prove service if necessary. Not that we need to do that, but we're going to have that proof anyway. And we're going to be filing and serving Well, I'll be serving directly a full case to the United States Supreme Court and a full case to the court itself under the new number we're putting together and the new process, the paperwork for as far as the cover sheet is concerned. I'll be filing a full copy to Attorney General Barr and, the United States Supreme Court, Attorney General Barr, and President of the United States will get a full copy. And, of course, as I mentioned, the court will get another full copy. Even though we've already got it under the statutory number, we're now going to put it under the natural law court number. And then we have volunteers who will serve papers on 94 federal districts. I believe there are 13 federal appellate courts. We'll be filing one with each one of those. And I believe the 50 governors, I think that's it. That's our plan at this point, right, Jan? I think the 94, 13, and 50. And
about 157 total. Yeah.
Okay, 157. So now there's also other people we want to get a hard copy to. The Judicial Watch we want to get a hard copy to. And we'll do some brainstorming to figure out what are the groups we might want to do this to. We're also going to try to get on as much radio as we can over the course of the next couple of weeks to talk about this paper and to, you know, get it out to the people. Let me see what else before we go forward. So anyway, just to recap what I had mentioned before, we're breaking this paper up into three places. Anybody who would like to follow along, you can go to our website, nationallibertyalliance.org, right there on the very front page, almost towards the top, you know, sort of a couple inches down off the top, you'll see a copy of the draft. Now, this it's not the exact paper. There's cover sheets and some other evidence we have to put in there and a few other things we need to put into this paper. And, you know, we're still looking for potential errors. So if anybody finds any errors, maybe they can let Jan know about that, and then we'll make that correction, and hopefully we'll get those corrections done before we do the filing over in, again, focusing in on Wednesday or Thursday of this week. So sometime after I do the filing, then we will post the final, and that's where people will download to send out on behalf of the grand jury copies to the 94 federal districts and so on. But again, to recap, tonight's going to be focusing in on the restoration and the declaration of the restoration of the law of the land. And again, next week, the second part we'll be reading focuses in on the systematic destruction of America. And the third part, the decision and the order by the grand jury from a court of record in a natural law court. And again, this court case has been in session ultimately for over 2 years at this point, and the defendants have never answered one word. Same thing, they've been doing that for 20 years. We've been trying to get them to respond. We started back, I'm aware of getting started with We the People back in, was it 1999? I think the first papers that were started to file was back 2000. And even Schultz did something with taking it to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court refused to hear it. His question was, do we still have a republic? That was the question. They wouldn't answer that. And he spoke about the right of redress out of the First Amendment, and they wouldn't respond to that either. So it was pretty depressing over the past 20 years. But the timing is perfect, I think. We've been working at this for a long time. We've come to that point. We've been putting a little steam the last couple of weeks because we knew what was coming up with the deep state, following the news and what Q was saying. And so we know that this is a good timing. Q says that August is going to be a hot month. And so the filing in August, I think, is perfect timing. A lot's going to be revealed between now and September. That's what I'm hearing. And the people are going to really start waking up. So hitting the court with these papers at this point in time, will be pretty good. We've got, I think it'll be a good response. I think we'll get a good response. Maybe some silence at first, but I think things are going to happen. But in any event, we have to move on. We have to press on. We're working on filing cases. We've got scores of cases that are coming in as joinders, and we're working on those, and those will be filed as they come in. We'll probably every Friday we'll file whatever we work on and get together that week, and we'll make a file and we'll post it, and we'll just continue on that, adding joinders and joinders and joinders. I perceive easily we'll have hundreds of cases, and hopefully we'll have thousands of cases. Again, critical mass is the key. Attaching cases that focus in on the abuse of courts, how they refuse us access to our own courts of law, how they have covered them, how they have denied us due process, denied us the most important part of due process, habeas corpus. They have denied us, taking our property in rem, stealing our children and our parents and their estates, and just destroying the people. And that's just the tip of the iceberg of what these people have done. And not just in the last 20 years, but in the last 50 years. But most of this destruction seems to have taken place since about, the last 20 years, since about 2000. Okay, so we're going to go through this. And again, it's part one of three. And we will pick up on the other two parts, one part next week, and then the last part the week after. Action at law demanding a return to the law and decision and order. Declaration of restoration of the law of the land and demand for the resignations of those who are of a mind to resist or suffer indictment for fraud on the court, conspiracy, felonies, and or treason. We the people, via the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, also known as the Sureties of Peace, here and after the people, are an assembly of more than 7,600 sovereign people from every state, being both the tribunal of this extraordinary action and the authors of all law under the authority of natural law by right of the covenants of 1776, 1789, and 1791, with our Creator under his natural law at large. Whenever any form of government becomes destructive to our rights, it is the right of the people to alter government and institute new servants, preamble to the Declaration of Independence. The people have an indubitable, unalienable, and indefeasible right to reform or change their government whenever it be found adverse or inadequate to the purposes of its institution. James Madison. This is that process. The natural liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will of legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule. Samuel Adams. Whenever justice becomes law, resistance becomes duty. Thomas Jefferson. Thomas Jefferson also said, if a government, either by malfeasance or neglect, fails to protect those rights, or even worse, if that government begins to violate those rights, then it is the right and the duty of the people to regain control of their affairs and set up a form of government which will serve the people better. These rights, which have been bestowed by the Creator, they cannot be altered or eliminated at any time. That is, they cannot be taken away or violated without the offender coming under the judgment and the wrath of the Creator. Unalienable right of self-rule. In our republic, common law is the law of the land by which we the people chose to be judged when we assumed among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled us. We the people further declared that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed. Obedience to the Constitution is the extent of that consent, and no judge or legislator can alter that which we the people ordained. To alter is high treason. The grand jury decides if a crime has been committed. All criminal prosecutions are to be decided by a jury in a natural law court such as this, and not by a chancellor or a judge in an equity court. The decisions of this court cannot be reexamined in any court of the United States. The judgment of this court of record, whose jurisdiction is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of the United States Supreme Court would be, and puts an end to inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. And all other courts are inferior and have no jurisdiction over the people without their consent. This is an extraordinary action at law by the above said tribunal for an extraordinary remedy via writ mandamus demanding a return to the law, decisions and orders, and predetermined indictments by the sureties of the peace on behalf of all the people for specific recovery of the people's heritage stolen by past judiciaries, congresses, and presidential administrations, sustained by this present United States Supreme Court, Federal Judiciary, U.S. House of Representatives, and U.S. Senate, hereinafter defendants, will be served on all who resist. Furthermore, due to our out-of-control corrupt court officers and magistrate judges who will not document and certify the jury's will, the grand jury foreman will act as the court administrator in place of corrupt magistrates in this court of record. Jurisdiction, natural law. This court has both personam and subject matter jurisdiction over our elected, appointed, and employed servants under Article 3, Section 2, the Magna Carta, the Declaration of Independence, and the United States Constitution, where the people ordained and established the law. Under our system of government, upon the individuality and intelligence of the sovereign citizen, the state does not claim to control them, except as his or her conduct to others leaving him or her the sole judge as to all that affects them. The very meaning of sovereignty is that the decree of the sovereign, not the government, makes the law. A consequence of this prerogative is the legal ubiquity of the king, his majesty, God, in the eye of the law, is always present in all his courts. Though he cannot personally distribute justice, his judges, or jurists, are the mirror by which the king's image, that is God's will, written in all the hearts of men, are reflected. For laws are made for us, we are not made for the law. Every man is independent of all legislative laws except those prescribed by nature. He is not bound by any of the institutions formed by his fellow men without his consent. The grand jury is paramount. In the case of United States v. William, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, confirmed that even the United States Supreme Court could not second-guess the jury, writing, "The judgment of a court of record, whose jurisdiction is final, is as conclusive on all the world as the judgment of this court would be. It is as conclusive on this court as it is on other courts. It puts an end to inquiry concerning the facts by deciding it. Inferior courts are those whose jurisdiction is limited and special, and whose proceedings are not according to the course of the common law. Criminal courts proceed according to statutory law. Jurisdictions and procedures are defined by statute. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to statutory law. Any court proceeding according to statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court. If the King's Bench, jury of 12, is not present in the court, it is not a Supreme Court of common law, and has no jurisdiction over the people summoned before it without their consent. The grand jury is one of the ways that we the people consent to the actions of our government. If anyone has been deprived of their unalienable rights, we will immediately grant full justice therein. The will of the grand jury is the opening and a manifestation of a due process in a court of law. The grand juries is the sureties of peace that we find in the Magna Carta, and was ordained by the people through the Fifth Amendment, and thereby officially acknowledged as an unalienable right. They are the posterity of our founding fathers. They are we, the people, that ordained and established the Constitution for the defendants. Failure to obey the law will result in this matter that has already been brought before the grand jury that previously decided mercy via correction first by way of this court of records, decisions, orders, and writs, and indictments for all those who continue in denial and resist the will of the people. Our founding fathers, with foresight, grafted into the common law Fifth Amendment a buffer that the people may rely upon for justice when public officials, including judges, go rogue, act in bad behavior, and criminally violate the law. U.S. v. Williams contended, the grand jury is an institution separate from the court, over whose functioning the courts do not preside. The grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but it is not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or referee between the government and the people. The grand jury's functional independence from the judicial branch is evident, both in the scope of its powers to investigate criminal wrongdoing and in the manner in which that power is exercised. Unlike a court whose jurisdiction is predicated upon a specific case or controversy, the grand jury can investigate merely on suspicion that the law is being violated, or even because it wants assurance that it is not. The Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury is comprised of 50 Unified United States Common Law Grand Juries, each unified among the counties within their respective states that were overwhelmingly unified by reconstituting the Common Law Grand Juries in all 3,133 United States counties. All 50 states have unified nationally as an assembly of thousands of people in the name of we the people to suppress through our courts of justice enemies both foreign and domestic within our government. This unified grand jury via tribunal will remain in session until we secure the nation from the tyrants at large and reinstate our Constitution. The people have been providentially provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary. We, the people, via the grand jury, from December 2016 to present, commanded via writ quo warrantos, informations, and writ mandamuses, all elected, appointed, and hired servants to obey the law of the land and join the people in our quest to reinstate the Constitution for the United States of America and bring to justice all subverts who resist. We, the people, have been providentially entrusted via natural law to dispense justice and were provided legal recourse to address the criminal conduct of the judiciary and our representatives. The people have the unbridled right by law and in law to impanel their own grand juries and present true bills of informations, indictments, and presentments to a court of justice, which is then required to commence a criminal proceeding under natural law. We, the people, did not consent to any legislative powers that legislate our behavior or penalize wrongdoers. We, the people, ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We, the people, vested Congress with statute-making powers. We, the people, defined and limited Congress's power of lawmaking. We, the people, ordained limited lawmaking powers via the Constitution. We, the people, did not vest the judiciary with lawmaking powers. We, the people, in all courts of law are free and independent jurists, independent from the judiciary, and we, the people, are the independent tribunal in all courts of law. The constitutions of most of our states assert that all power is inherent in the people, that they may exercise it by themselves in all cases to which they think themselves competent, as in electing their functionaries, executives, and legislative and deciding by a jury of themselves both fact and law in all judiciary cases in which any fact is involved. Therefore, we the people hereby nullify all court rules that prevent the people's unalienable rights of access to natural law courts without cost, and where the people are untainted, are the untainted king's bench, governed by a natural law alone. Extraordinary action. The purpose of this extraordinary action is to liberate the American spirit from the tyranny of the judiciary and Congress, and to remind our public servants that the people are sovereign. We, the people, naively believed that a judiciary was good and benevolent, but we have been deceived. We have been betrayed. We should have heeded Thomas Jefferson's warning more seriously when he said, "It would be the judiciary that would place us under the despotism of an oligarchy. The Constitution is a mere thing of wax in the hands of the judiciary, which they must twist and shape into any form they please. Our judges are as honest as other men, and not more so. And their power is more dangerous, as they are in office for life, and not responsible as the others functionaries are to the elective control." He went on to say that over time the federal government would usurp power from the states. The germ of dissolution of our federal government is in the federal judiciary, an irresponsible body working like gravity by night and by day, gaining a little today and a little tomorrow, and advancing its noiseless steps like a thief over the field of jurisdiction until all shall be usurped from the states. Beginning December 13, 2016, and continuing to present, we the people, via the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury, also known as the Sureties of the Peace, filed under the auspices of the court and the contempt of its black robe arbiters, as we serve numerous writs, informations, and redress of grievances directed to all three branches of government, 50 governors, state judiciaries, and all county sheriffs concerning treason by enemies both foreign and domestic. See attached list. Whereas in order to operate under the lawful judicial auspices of the court, we the grand jury filed the aforesaid in the United States District Court for the Northern District of New York, case number 116-CV-1490. Also available at nationallibertyalliance.org/action-against-judiciary. We also copied Attorney General Jeff Sessions and President Trump. All defendants had a duty to act, and yet the record shows that no defendants took action. We were met with silence and disdain. Accordingly, respondents became liable of misprision of treason, some out of ignorance and some out of contempt, and unlike your legislative law, mercy is available to all that comply, and our wrath upon those who don't. 18 U.S.C. subsection 2382, misprison of treason. Whoever owing allegiance to the United States and having knowledge of the commission of any treason against them, conceals and does not as soon as may be disclosed and make known the same to the President or some judge of the United States, or to the governor, or to some judge of justice of a particular state, is guilty of misprison of treason, and shall be fined under this title or imprisoned not more than 7 years or both. It thereby follows that our petition preempts silence and presumes an answer. In contrast to the right of the people to remain silent, you will find that we granted no such leave to our servants. When they took their oath, they were empowered and trusted with certain authorities, and thereby became duty-bound to give an account of their stewardship when inquired. For silence can only be equated with fraud when there is a legal or moral duty to speak, or where an inquiry left unanswered would be intentionally misleading. The people's unalienable right to correct an error, a fault, or an evil action by government actors via redress is the constitutional defense system against government usurpation and oppressions. Such an ordained government by man is obedient to God's command to subdue, whereas his judgment follow in that the children of the wicked will be brought to justice and shall become incapable of wasting us anymore. This is our sacred responsibility in this action at natural law, to which the judiciary must respond and must correct their lawless ways or face, if not our wrath, then his. The People's Paramount Act. The unalienable right of the people to prosecute government for redress is paramount. We, the people, never gave government sovereign immunity. We, the people, have commanded the bar-controlled federal judiciary, hereinafter defendants and respondents, for redress of grievances via writ mandamus, to put an end to their tyranny, whereas by their presumed authority, contrary to their oath and duty, they fraudulently perform the will of the bar and not the people, and claim the Constitution for the United States and its capstone Bill of Rights abrogated by statutes written by traitorous bar members, foreign and domestic, past and present, passed by traitorous legislators, past and present, which the acts of the conspiracy, present, past, by traitorous legislators, past and present, which are acts of conspiracy, treason, and war against the United States of America, and we the people. When the people's paramount right of the First Amendment is utterly annihilated, it will force the Second again. Almost 2.5 centuries ago, our founding fathers, in an extraordinary action in the spirit of Magna Carta, as the 13 colonies resolved it necessary to declare their independence in 1776 and became 13 sovereign and independent states, forming a confederacy that in 1789 became a nation. The United States of America, following the recourse of our founding fathers' resolutions, we the people being their posterity, in 2019 find ourselves in the same quandary and likewise reiterate that we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, and that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter it and to institute new servants as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more willing to suffer while evils are manageable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms by which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing consistently the same object, reveals a design to reduce us under absolute despotism, it is our right, it is our duty to throw off such corrupt government and to provide new gods for our future security. Such has been the patience, sufferance of these United States, and such is now the necessity with which constrains we the people to alter our former government servants. The history of this present judiciary is a history of repeated injuries and usurpations, all having in direct object the establishment of an absolute tyranny over the people. To prove this, let facts be declared. Subversion. There is a hidden hand within our government that orchestrates events, controls our courts, and dictates subversive legislation through the insidious, traitorous bar that willfully advocates, abets, advises, prints, publishes, edits, issues, circulates, sells, distributes, and publicly displays written and printed matter, advocating, advising, and teaching the overthrowing of the government of the United States, by expunging the law of the land, passing repugnant anti-constitutional statutes, replacing justice with social justice, also known as socialism, claiming us a democracy and not a republic, concealing natural law courts and tainting and stacking grand and petty juries in violations of 18 U.S.C. subsection 1385, which states, the advocating and overthrow of the government, whoever, knowingly or willfully, advocates, abets, advises, or teaches the duty, necessity, desirability, or propriety of overthrowing or destroying the government of the United States, or the government of any state, territory, district, or possession thereof, or the government of any political subdivision therein, by force or violence, or by the assassination of any office, officer, or any such government, or whoever with intent to cause the overthrow or destruction of any such government prints, publishes, edits, issues, circulates, sells, distributes, or publicly displays any written or printed material advocating, advertising, or teaching the duty, necessity, desirability, or propriety of overthrowing or destroying any government in the United States by force or violence or attempts to do so, or whoever organizes to help or attempt to organize any society, group, or assembly of person who teaches, advocates, or encourages the overthrow or destruction of any such government by force or violence, or becomes or is a member of or affiliated with any such society, group, or assembly of persons knowingly the purpose thereof. America is in shambles, and our elected servants walk as blind men. Now is the time for all good men, elected, appointed, and employed, to come to the aid of their country and take a stand for justice. These tyrants hold elected and appointed state and federal offices and have weaponized our government agencies, including deep state, such as willing felons in the IRS, CIA, FBI, DHS, BLM, Departments of Treasury, and others. The United States Supreme Court, Federal Judiciary, U.S. House of Representatives, and U.S. Senate, in collusion with deep state-controlled agencies, have denied our God, without which there exists no justice, denied us due process, abrogate of common law, create federal debtors' prison via tax courts, robbed our homes through non-judicial tax foreclosures, created free speech zones, labeled patriots terrorists, destroyed our political process, stole our free press, infringed upon our rights to defend ourselves, destroyed our manufacturing base, chased 80% of the top Fortune 500 companies out of America, destroyed our economy, turned our dollar into debt, robbed our silver and gold, indoctrinated and demoralized our children with an outcome-based socialist education, opened our borders, use the FBI, BLM, and other federal agencies to terrorize American ranchers, miners, and loggers in order to sell off America's resources to foreign countries for personal gain. Sold our postal system to foreign corporations. Brokered our electric company's sales to foreign corporations. Spied on we the people, intercepting and storing all our communications in case we become a person of interest. Concealed our natural law courts. Additionally, our servants have refused assent to laws the most wholesome and necessity for the public good. Our servants have trodden upon the unalienable rights of the people. Our servants have passed legislation destructive to our Constitution that is forbidden by the Constitution. Our servants have exposed we the people to all the dangers of invasion from without and subversion from within. Our servants have obstructed our laws that prevent foreign insurgents from penetrating our borders, thereby overflowing our nation with hostile gangs, criminals, drugs, human trafficking, bringing economic destruction and placing at risk the securities of our state. Our servants have obstructed the administration of justice by refusing submission to the law established for the judiciary powers. Our servant judges have transformed themselves into tormentors of the people, dependent upon the will of the bar guild alone, creating a society of mercenary economic corporate hitmen esquires, resolute on destroying common law, enslaving our states, enslaving the people, building statutory and debtors' prisons that serve foreign bankers. Our servants have erected a multitude of fourth branch administrative agencies accountable to the unaccountable to the Constitution, and sent forth hither swarms of corporate administrative disobedient to the Constitution, revenue, and code enforcement officers to harass our people and eat out our substance. Our servants have kept among us in time of peace excessively militarized local police forces and foreign troops without the consent of the people. Our servants have joined with foreign bankers to subject us to jurisdictions foreign to our Constitution and unacknowledged by our laws, giving assent to their acts of pretended legislation. Our servants have imposed a multitude of property-robbing taxes, direct taxes, fees, and fines on us without our consent. Our servants have deprived us of the benefits of untainted petit juries. Our servants have deprived us of the benefit of unrigged, untainted grand juries. Our servants have transported us into jurisdictions unknown to be tried for pretended offenses. Our servants have enlarged its boundaries under the guise of District of Columbia, so that to render it at once an example and fit instrument for introducing absolute rule in these states. Our servants have arrogantly disregarded our Bill of Rights, abolishing our most valuable laws, altering fundamentally the people's form of government. Past administrations have declared power to legislate through executive order. Our servants have waged war against us. Our servants have plundered our manufacturing base, ravaged our small businesses, and destroyed the middle class. Our servants have excited domestic insurrections amongst us. Our servants have engaged in human trafficking of our children and elderly through equity courts. Our servants have engaged in racketeering and extortion through our courts. Our servants have held mock trials in our courts not of record, and thereby unlawfully incarcerating and financially fleecing millions of people, denying due process. Our servants have impaneled bogus puppet grand and petit juries in order to perform bar will and profiteering. Our servants have stolen our homes in rem and fraud, assisting banksters in double dipping. Our servants have kidnapped our children and destroyed our families in family courts. Our servants have robbed our parents, turned their twilight years into nightmares, and destroyed our families in probate courts. Our servants have expunged our common law. Our servants have transformed our unalienable rights into crimes that violate our Bill of Prohibitions in every stage, serving the bar and not the people. Our servants have assumed the role of master. Further violations. Against Amendment 1, our servants have denied free speech, internet censorship, and patriotic speech, created free speech zones, and banned religious expression on holy days such as Christmas. Our servants have commanded the press via the deep state. Our servants have denied our right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Against Amendment 2, our servants have licensed our rights to bear arms. They have sent the militia necessary for a security of a free state out of our country. Against Amendment 4, our servants have violated our privacy under the Patriot Act, using warrantless searches, spying on the people, eavesdropping on every written and spoken, cell phone activation without a battery on our conversation, and unlawfully maintaining files on the people to be used to target dissenters and enslave the people. Against Amendment 5, our servants have accused people in courts not of law, incarcerating millions with corrupt puppet statutory grand juries, and forcing people to witness against themselves. Our servants have deprived millions of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, and have seized private property under rem and caprice. And nonjudicial foreclosures, summary proceedings in criminal cases, puppet statutory petit juries, refusal habeas corpus, refusal of assistance of counsel for defense unless it is bar approved, and bar cooperative attorneys who have been taught to leave the Constitution at the court entrance, placing people twice in jeopardy with a judge declared hung jury, prosecutors overruling grand juries, statutory courts instead of courts of justice, constitution and Bible-free courtrooms, and trials in jurisdictions unknown. Against Amendment 6, our servants have denied millions of people trials by an impartial jury, prosecution against those who exercise jury nullification. Against Amendment 7, our servants have denied natural law courts. Our servants have denied trial by untainted jury. Our servants have denied the people's heritage, common law. Against Amendment 8, our servants have imposed excessive bails, fines, cruel and unusual punishments, such as diesel therapy, chaining people to a floor in a cell and being unable to reach toilets, cold cells without pillows and blankets, solitary confinement, political prisons, removal of meds, especially to the elderly prisons, beatdowns, no access to law libraries for political prisoners. Against Amendment 9, our servant have denied scores of all of other unalienable rights retained by the people. And against Amendment 10, our servants have corrupted government at every level and have turned sovereignty of the people into a crime with the unconstitutional 16th Amendment that enslaves the people and the unconstitutional 17th Amendment that enslaves the states, thereby decimating all state rights and people's unalienable rights. Bar-controlled federal and state court judges, by their presumed authority, contrary to their oath and duty, violate the supreme law of the land. Bar prosecutors overrule the people's indictments. We have seen case after case where district attorneys refuse to indict crimes committed by bureaucrats, criminal corporate CEOs, and cartels as they block the people from meeting with the grand jury. We had one case where a DA went after an individual charging him with stalking the grand jury and was indicted and went to jail for 2 years because the criminal DA did not want the grand jury to hear about all the crimes of these untouchables. Take the recent Jesse Smollett case where Cook County grand jury indicted Smollett this year on felony charges. And on March 26th, less than 3 weeks after the indictment, the Cook County State Attorney, Kim Fox, like the legions of many other corrupt court officers, unlawfully removed the indictment against Smollett. In the case of the United States v. William, Justice Anton Scalia, writing for the majority, said, "Motions to quash indictments based upon the sufficiency of the evidence relied upon by the grand jury were unheard of the common law in England. The quashing of an indictment positively contradicts the common law of the Fifth Amendment grand jury, and the traditional American practice was described by Justice Nelson, writing circuit in 1852, as follows. No case has ever been cited, nor have we been able to find any furnishings, an authority for looking into the revising the judgment of a grand jury upon the evidence, for the purpose of determining whether or not the finding was founded upon sufficient proof or whether there was a deficiency in respect to any part of the complaint. We accepted Justice Nelson's description, Costello versus the United States, where we held that it would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury institution to permit an indictment to be challenged on the ground that there was incompetent or inadequate evidence before the grand jury. And we reaffirmed this principle recently in the Bank of Nova Scotia, where we held that a mere fact that evidence itself is unreliable is not sufficient to require a dismissal of the indictment, and that a challenge to the reliability or competence of the evidence presented to a grand jury will not be heard. It would make little sense, we think, to abstain from reviewing the evidentiary support for the grand jury's judgment while scrutinizing the sufficiency of the prosecutor's presentation. A complaint above the quality or adequacy of the evidence can always be recast as a complaint that the prosecutor's presentation was incomplete or misleading. Other words in Costello bear repeating: review of facially valid indictments on such grounds would run counter to the whole history of the grand jury institution, and neither justice nor the concept of a fair trial requires it. The people have the unalienable right to indict and judge, and no hired servant can place themselves above their masters. Again, the United States versus Williams, quoting, rooted in long centuries of Anglo-American history, the grand jury is mentioned in the Bill of Rights, but not in the body of the Constitution. It has not been textually assigned, therefore, to any of the branches described in the first three articles. It is a constitutional fixture in its own right. In fact, the whole theory of its function is that it belongs to no branch of the institutional government, serving as a kind of a buffer or a referee between the government and the people. Although the grand jury normally operates, of course, in the courthouse and under the judicial auspices, its institutional relationship with the judicial branch has traditionally been, so to speak, at arm's length. Judges' direct involvement in the functioning of the grand jury has generally been confined to the constructive one of calling the grand jurors together and administering their oaths of office. Okay, this brings us to the end of part one of three parts. We'll pick up on part two next Monday and part three the following Monday. Okay, Jan, are you there? Jan?
Yes, I'm here, John.
Hey, listen, tonight when you upload this program tonight, maybe name it People versus Judiciary, or you could put the Federal Judiciary, one of three. And next week we'll do the second part, and the week after the third part. Meanwhile, the paper that we had out there, people can download and read it. It still is a draft. When reading it, I could see we got some corrections to be made. A few things I thought we had taken out and changed around a little bit wasn't done. So, you know, I made some notes in red when I was going along, and I'm going to make those corrections. So this is not the final draft that's up there. But we're going to leave that up there for now so that people can read it, and maybe they'll have comments on it and thoughts, and they can get it to us at one of these meetings tonight. Actually, we're going to be filing it this week. If you have any thoughts or corrections, get that information. Who should we have that directed to, Jan, because you're going away for a day or two? Maybe to Francine?
You can send it to me, and if it's just a couple little things, I can pick it up somewhere along the line.
And get back to me. So you'll be taking email while you're away. Okay. All right, so you can get whatever changes or thoughts or ideas to Jan at his email, jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. Again, that's jan@nationallibertyalliance.org. And I guess we'll take it from there. Let me see what else we have. Do we have any questions?
We have absolutely no questions for this evening, John.
Oh, okay, good. Go on then. All right, hopefully we'll stay on focus. Huh?
It's a light evening.
Okay. Yep. All right, well, anyway, hopefully when we go to open forum, we'll get into questions and thoughts and about what we're doing and how we're doing it, and for people to understand what we're doing. Nothing we're doing hasn't been done before, but what we're doing and the way we're doing it, bringing numerous things together, it's never been done in that kind of an order. But nothing we're doing is not the case where it's not been done before. It's been done before. You know, the fact that we've been filing papers in court for over 2 years, and they've been receiving it, and when we had a judge stick his feet into it, we cut off his toes, we indicted him, they've been pretty much silent since. They have not been sending our papers back. They have been filed. And again, we've been serving copies also to the president and to the attorney general back when it was Sessions, and now it'll be Barr. So we've been moving forward, and we've been going forward for 2 years, and they've just been silent. They refuse to obey the law. It's that simple, you know. And we have more to reveal as we go on to these next three parts. You know, when we get into the systematic destruction of America and how they, you know, conspired supporting the ABA and working with the ABA in order to seize powers that are not delegated to them, and the destruction of our sovereignty. Not that they can destroy our sovereignty, but they're denying us our right of being sovereign people. And so we lay out the acts of betrayal, the acts of fraud, and the acts of treason continued in the second part of this paper, which is about, you know, one-third of the paper, another 15 pages or so. We read about 16 pages. So probably another 16 pages after that. And then the final part, which is the decision and order, which is 15 pages or so. And so we covered a lot of stuff. We laid out a lot of it, and we still haven't got everything in there. All the destruction, all of the havoc, all of the violation, the suffering that they have put upon the people, just over the past 20 years alone, okay, it's incalculable. It's just overwhelming, and it goes back further than 20 years. You know, I'm just talking about when we started to really step up to try to stop this craziness within our government and bring back our Constitution. For 20 years, and they have refused, they have rejected, they have denied, they have remained silent, and that is fraud. They have a duty to speak. No elected or appointed individual can claim the right to remain silent when they are questioned in their duty. They have no right. They have a right in their personal life, okay, and they need to separate that. But if they're enacting in as an elected or an appointed individual and acting under some authority and a jurisdiction, they have the duty to speak concerning that when we ask them. They cannot deny us. And they should be removed from office, and we will indict these people. They should be removed from office, and the next person should come up and answer. And if they don't want to answer, then we move them from office. And so on, until we get to the people who will speak. Who will do the right thing. Now, I'm sure a lot of people that would like to take a step forward in government when these papers go out, but I think it'll take a while before they get the guts up to do it, because they've been thoroughly threatened, and they've had a gun to their heads, the people who are not happy with what's going on that's inside of our government. But I think, again, that's why the timing of this paper is, in my opinion, just right on time, you know. And again, what's going on in Washington, the fact that these actors are not going to have cover anymore, that's being broken, you know, and they're not going to be able to have the protection anymore. They're going to be vulnerable. They're going to be exposed. And when that realization comes in, that's when we will be able to press in and take back. And again, if we, the people, do not step up and take 100% control of our judiciary, of our natural law courts, which is our unalienable right and our duty to do, it's a process by which we have government by consent. If we don't step up and do it, then we deserve to lose liberty, then we're not stepping up for the king of the court from whom we made a covenant with in the Declaration of Independence to be under his law, under his rule, and answer to no man but God himself in a court of law and free from all legislative law. We are not to be under any legislation governed or controlled by any of that. And on the other side of things, if we, the people, don't step up and take control of our political process, then again, we don't deserve liberty. As Jefferson said, if a people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what was and never will be. We need to gain knowledge. We have to have the understanding of what's going on, the understanding of who we are as a people, what our heritage is, what is true liberty. We need to know our founding fathers. We need to know our heritage. We need to know our God. We need to understand the process of our government. We need to understand how the court works. And the court is very simple, really. You know, it gets complicated when you get into the equity courts, but that doesn't concern us. And if it does concern someone that they want to get involved and think that there's a lot of problems there, which I'm sure there are some, but not as much as they've just taken these equity courts and applied it upon us, and that's where the problem is. But nevertheless, people can study the law of inequity and get involved and see what's going on there too. And there's 57 different titles to get involved with, so it's a big task. But law is simple. It's very simple. It's really about the facts. Okay, that's what a court case is really about, the facts, just the facts. And the end results is to restore the injured party. And in the restoring of the injured party, if done the right way, the person who injured that party also gets restored and brought back into society. Okay, let me see what else I got before we move on. I think that's it,
John,
for the moment.
Can I say a few words?
Yeah, go right ahead.
Yeah, and those people who have volunteered to do mailings, I have information back from all of them.
Yeah. Before you go on, I just want to make a note. I don't know if you picked up on this. I made it earlier. I'm not going to be filing the papers till Wednesday or maybe even Thursday. So, you know, we can get all that work done. You can get out what you can, but then you can get all the work done Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday or whatever, and then they can get their papers out by Friday or Monday or whatever, you know, this Friday or next Monday. And I think next Monday is when they should mail them out, because I have a feeling we may not even meet the Wednesday deadline, might end up doing it Thursday anyway. So I just want to let you know that to work it into your schedule. Go ahead.
Okay, with the people that have signed up so far, I have been able to cover all 94 federal districts, all 13 of the appellate courts, and about 25 of the governors. That leaves us short of a primary mailing of about 25 people or copies. And some people have not gotten back to me yet to indicate how many they could send. They had several people that came through with 25 copies, and that's terrific. That really runs the ante up quick. But we still need enough people to generate 25 more copies mailed as a bare minimum, and plus whatever else John comes up with that we need to send to. So please don't assume everything is running along and we're in Fat City doing great. We need still some more people to volunteer to do some mailings. We really appreciate it. Just email me, Jan@nationallibertyalliance.org, and we'll get it done. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other announcements that you're aware of, Jan?
No. We've been working pretty heavy on this thing the last few days, John. Nothing else has come up.
Yeah, yeah. All right. And I don't know. I think I mentioned this earlier. We've got about, I don't know, maybe 80 indictments or so. Francine, I don't know if she's unmuted, but maybe I know she was running through those numbers for us and working up those papers. But we've got about 80 indictments that we're going to be filing with this court case, and many, 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 many more, I'm sure. Whenever anybody sticks their fingers or their toes into this case, we're going to indict them immediately. This is what the grand jury, when we came together last time, decided upon doing when we filed these papers. Anybody who gets in the way of this court case gets an immediate indictment, and we will be sending it over to Attorney General Barr, and also probably to the U.S. Attorney out there. Well, we're gonna send it to Attorney General Barr, and then we'll put a letter in there requesting that he appoint some U.S. attorneys to work on these cases that we have done. After all, we indeed are the people. And we're not just a small group, here in New York and some little corner of the state or something of that nature. No, we are people in every single state of this union. So we have a decent membership. And we have visited, using our membership, we have visited every single state. And, to bring the information of common law to the people, to get their approval, and it's been almost unanimous everywhere we went. Occasionally, we've had some troublemakers here and there, maybe a half a dozen of them across the state at most. But the rest of them have been, one or two people have just caused havoc or tried to cause problems at these meetings. But all in all, we've had an overwhelming response. And so through this process, we were reconstituting the common law grand juries, which isn't necessary to do, but it was something that made sense to do. And it gives us more clout, more authority, because, again, we're not just people from New York. We're not a couple of people here or there. No, we are people in every single state of the union, and we have touched every single county in America. There are some exceptions. You know, there are certain counties that are just totally wilderness. You know, you get up into Alaska, for instance. Of course, we didn't touch those counties. But any place that had a federal district court we did get into those counties. I wouldn't be said correctly. Counties that had a populace, let's put it that way. Okay, we'll move over to Brent. Brent's going to take the mic for a short while, and then we're going to do an open forum. Any questions, comments, thoughts, whatever. And again, we will be taking joinders. Anybody wants to join their case, we will be joining cases relentlessly for the months to come. And even after we get these people to yield, and if we break into the courts to take control back, okay, we're going to continue to be bringing these cases and cases and cases. And they eventually will be delivered up to local local juries for dealing with this. Some of these cases we will be making decisions on where it is crystal clear law, which is most of what we've got, crystal clear cases in law. We will be making decisions in that and demanding the people to be restored and compensated to some degree for the injuries. So all of those cases that we've been working on and all the cases we've brought in already and the cases coming in and the more cases in the future months coming in, this is what we will be doing. So, okay, with that, we're going to move over to Brent, who's going to take the mic for a short period, teach us something, or talk to us. Brent Winters is the author of The Excellence of the Common Law. His website is commonlawyer.com. Brent, you got the mic. If he's unmuted. Yeah, you're muted there, Brent. There you go.
I am now, yeah. Thank you, John. And my comments are my own. May or may not express the views of the leadership of National Liberty Alliance. And I take responsibility for what I say. And if somebody wants to challenge me or complain, I will deal with it. First thing we have to do is identify our enemy. Is there an enemy out there? Well, sure there is. Always has been. Never has been a time there wasn't many enemies. That's why we speak of that ancient common law oath to defend our law of the land. That's what our Constitution calls itself, against enemies that are foreign. That means as a member of that able-bodied bunch of fellows called the militia. That's militia duty. Foreign, and then domestic. That means a willingness of that same body of men to serve on the jury. That's what that ancient oath refers to. But the question is, who is the enemy? Now, if you talk to fundamentalist Baptists, a lot of them say, well, the enemy is the Pope of Rome. That's what they say. And his priesthood. That's what they say. And then some other people will say, no, it's not just them. It's the Illuminati together with them. The Illuminati, that's who it is. And other people say, no, it's not them at all. They're not at the top of the enemy list. The people that really control things are the Zionists. Those are the Talmudic Jews. Those are the ones that are the enemies of America. And, of course, they point to people like Jeffrey Epstein and his cohorts in England that were clearly working for the Mossad and had all their money from the Mossad and did all that they did in order to control America. They say, though, that's the problem. That's the root of the problem. If we could stop them, we could stop everything. And other people say, no, it's It's the collectivist. It's the communist threat. That's what it is. And then they say, well, it's really the Bolsheviks. Those are the ones that are at the bottom of the collectivism. And the Bolsheviks, then they say, are the Jews. And on and on and on, people. And the ones that accuse this group refuse to accuse the other group and all. Well, in my humble studied opinion, it appears to me that our true adversary is much more clever than that. And if he can get us focused just on any single group, then he's licked us. Even lawyers. I mean, if you say it's all the lawyers, they're the problem. Are they the problem? Well, certainly they're part of the problem. But all of these together, the Illuminati and all the secret organizations all over the world, and the collectivists and the communists, those are all just various labels for isms and schisms, just dozens of them that we wish were wasms. They're very powerful. And when men get control of powerful institutions, they will abuse that power, period, end of sentence, end of paragraph. That's it. That's why it's important that power be dispersed. But there is an enemy, and he controls very much, and he does it in a sophisticated way that is beyond our understanding. He's been doing it for thousands and thousands of years, and he's very adept and very experienced at it. And you think you can lick him. You can't. You can't lick him. There's only one remedy, that will lick the enemy as a practical matter, and that is, of course, that's all lawlessness. What they're doing is lawlessness. It's against the law. It's a conspiracy. It's an agreement to break the law. That's a conspiracy. Conspiracy is not a theory. It's a reality. It's with us now. To deny it is just downright silly. Of course there's a conspiracy. People agree to do evil things all day, every day, and they're in our courts being prosecuted. We're not getting at the right ones, though, the Jeffrey Epsteins of the world. But the only remedy to the lawlessness that this evil empire, you know, some people say empires, but they're all combined into a common goal because there's a single personage that controls it all. This evil empire is controlled from the top, and the only remedy to its lawlessness is true law. True law. The only remedy to lawlessness, and that's what we're trying to talk about. And our country has two volumes of law that are fundamental to all of our proper laws. Our Declaration of 76 lists them. The laws of nature, number one, that's the first volume, the laws of nature, unwritten in creation, unwritten in the nature of things. It's the way things are, and they will not change. The author of those laws has not written those laws down. We write them down. We observe sometimes and write them down. The second volume is the laws of nature of God. Our Maker ensured that it was written, the true lawgiver, and that's the Bible. That's what that phrase means in our Declaration of 76. And I cite on the authority of William Blackstone, the first volume of his commentaries on the laws of England. He makes that clear. The laws of nature are unwritten in the nature of things. That's our common law. That's our observations of the way things are, and they will not change. And we've learned to be pretty good at that over the centuries. We've gotten better at it because we keep compiling experience upon experience upon experience, century after century. And then the laws of nature's God, the Bible, is fixed in what it says. And we can find there what our lawgiver tells us was once hidden and is now revealed, because he calls those mysterions, mysteries, translated. It's not a translation, that's a transliteration, but when you see the word mystery in the Bible, this is a mystery, Paul says, for example. He's not talking about something that you can't understand. He's talking about something he has just explained, or that he's fixing to explain, or the Bible has explained. It is something that was hidden and is now revealed. And we can find those kind of things there. I went through a wedding ceremony yesterday, and in the Book of Common Prayer, Cranmer wrote the Book of Common Prayer. He knew more about marriage than any man living. He's the one that told Henry VIII, don't ask the Pope whether or not you can be married. He didn't have a clue. Why don't you just go to the Bible and look there and see if you are supposed to be married or not married and who you're supposed to be married to. Henry VIII was no paragon of virtue, but that particular principle caught on in a lot of ways in our English-speaking world. But he talks there in the marriage vows of the Book of Common Prayer that are so popular and so traditional in America. He talks about the mystery between a man and a wife. Well, Cranmer wasn't talking about something we can't understand. He was talking about something that the laws of nature's God had revealed to us. And that's a monumental point that ought to be made more often. Well, we're talking about the law of the land. That's another name for common law, the laws of nature. And we've been going through it clause by clause and blow by blow, and we're into Article 1, Section 10, I believe. Yeah, here it is, Section 10, Article 1, Clause 1. Section 10 of Article 1, Clause 1. This is about the powers of Congress. And then it gets into some general matters here. It says, no state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation, grant letters of marque and reprisal, coin money, emit bills of credit, make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts, pass any bill of attainder, ex post facto law, or law impairing the obligation of contracts, or grant any title of nobility. Now that there is a mouthful with some jawbreakers in it. Let's see if we can break it down here a little bit. I want to read it one more time. Listen closely. This is the observations. This is the law of the land. This is the laws of nature. This is the observations upon which the states and the people of the states agreed. They observed it, and they said, this is true. This is law. And we're going to say that our government doesn't have jurisdiction to do these things because we've learned it's a law of nature over the centuries. We can read history. We see it now. We just went through a bloody war. And when it talks about bills of credit, emitting bills of credit, well, they tried that during the war. It didn't work. It destroyed their economy. They ain't going to do that again. So they're going to forbid states. Now, this is not a prohibition to the general government in Washington, D.C. That prohibition was made in the previous clause, Section 9, Clause 8. No title of nobility shall be granted by the United States. Well, this is some of the same subject matter, but this is what the states aren't able to do. Of course, titles of nobility can be granted by the general government, it says in the previous clause, with the consent of Congress. That's seldom said, should be said. Not that I promote titles of nobility, I don't, but I'm just making the point. Let's be accurate. No state, however, shall grant any title of nobility, and there are no exceptions to that. There is an exception to the federal government allowing it to happen, but no exceptions to states. No state shall enter into any treaty, alliance, confederation. Well, that was the problem. We had that terrible war where 600,000 people were killed. The war between the northern and the southern tiers of the states. And the southern tiers of the states said, we're going to abide by the Constitution. We're not going to form a confederation because the Constitution doesn't allow us to do that. So what we're going to do is leave the Union when we're not, and make it so we're not any longer under this Constitution, and then we're going to form a confederation. That's what they did. Of course, the northern states said, no, you can't do that. You can't leave and join either. That was really explained the fight, just this clause right here. They can't, the states can't grant letters of marque and reprisal. Those are giving letters to private folk outside of government to go harass the shipping and steal shipping from other countries. But let's go through what I've got written here. By the way, I'm going through most of what I say here is in my book, called the United States Constitution and Declaration of Independence, Declaration of 76, A Common Lawyer Comments, Clause by Clause. Short book, fits in your shirt pocket, but it's 218 pages. I touch everything, and I try to hit the nail direct on the head concerning each clause of the Constitution. And in this, by the way, I want to make a little plug here. I haven't done this for a year, probably. But in this, I have the table of contents, and the table of contents I've constructed in such a way as to show the outline of the Declaration of 76. I've never seen that anywhere, and it has a very clear outline of the way it's constructed. It's organized to the proverbial eye teeth, and if you understand the outline, the book even becomes clearer. The document, not my book. The document, it becomes clearer what they're trying to say. Well, as back to this clause 10, through each of the several states, though each of the several states is sovereign, respecting its sister states, foreign countries, and the general government. I'm quoting myself here. This clause allocates the powers it lists to the general government. Our Constitution never says whether a state has the right to secede, that means to withdraw, from the Union of States. That's why the southern states decided they go ahead and do that. It wasn't forbidden, so why don't they do it? And by the way, folks are still arguing about that today. It's a hot question. Do the states have the right to leave the Union? The foregoing clause, however, taken in its plain sense, does bar any of the several states of the Union from entering a confederation with any other nation or with any of its sister states. If a state does withdraw from the Union, as the southern states once did, our Constitution would no longer bind the withdrawing state. Thus, it would be free to confederate with sister states having withdrawn or with other countries. Though men such as Senators Sam Houston of Texas, Thomas Hart Benton of Missouri, Henry Clay of Kentucky, and Southern Confederacy President Jefferson Davis's home county by majority vote, all of these men and the home county of the President of the Confederacy opposed secession. Others held that the general government in Washington, D.C., by abandoning common law first principles, had breached our Constitution, state secession. In all events, I'm still quoting from myself here, in all events, each state has kept all the powers of sovereignty our Constitution never allots to the general government. In short, the federal government has only those powers our Constitution lists, these and no others, these and no more. No state shall, I'm quoting the clause here. Here's the next thing I wanted to talk about. It says in this clause of our Constitution, no state shall emit bills of credit. This bars any state from issuing paper money. No state of the United States, by declaration of our Constitution of the United States, has authority to issue paper money. And the clause is phrased here, tender in payment of debts, called legal tender, a tender, is that which the law deems to satisfy a debt once tendered to the creditor, whether he accepts it or not. When we talk about legal tender, we're talking about a law that says, now, if anybody has dollar bills, for example, if this law, Congress passes a law that says anybody who has dollar bills printed, and that say Federal Reserve note that we have printed and authorized, if anybody offers those in payment of a debt, and the other person doesn't want those bills, but they want gold or silver, then that other person cannot bring an action in court and demand gold or silver, because the government has said that the greenbacks are legal tender. In other words, all you got to do is offer them. The other guy doesn't want to take them, he can't demand anything else. That's what legal tender laws say. If the Congress passes a law that says gold is legal tender and silver, you offer gold and silver in payment of a debt, and the other fellow doesn't want gold and silver, he wants greenbacks, well, you don't have to give him greenbacks because you've made that offer. The law says that's all you have to do to pay a debt is tender it. If he doesn't want it, there's nothing you can do about it, and he can't drag you into court and make you give him something else. Unless you agree, of course. You wanted to give him something else, that's different. But he couldn't go into court and force you to give him something else and payment of that debt. A state can require, according to this clause, however, that a debtor's offering of the right amount of gold and silver shall satisfy the debt, whether or not the creditor accepts it. See, this clause up here just forbids states from, they can't make, well, let me read it. This clause says that no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. Bottom line, no state can make greenback money, paper money, tender in payment of debts. They can't make that a required payment of debt if you offer it. That doesn't say they can't make gold and silver coin. There have been cases in the Supreme Court where I think in the state of Oregon, back in the 1920s or sometime, and they said there was a certain kind of tax, liquor tax, tobacco tax, I don't remember what it was. It didn't make any difference for the purposes of my comments. But the state of Oregon said this tax has to be paid in gold or silver. And one man offered him greenbacks. He sent greenbacks, or a check to draw on a bank for greenbacks. Oh, it didn't make any difference. But he offered greenbacks. And the state of Oregon said, we ain't taking greenbacks. The law says you got to give us gold or silver. Oh, it wound its way all the way up to the United States Supreme Court. And the United States Supreme Court said, the state's sovereign. We have no authority to tell the state that they have to accept greenbacks. As a matter of fact, the Constitution of the United States says they don't have to do that. Now, some people have argued, and this is a good argument, that when it comes to taxes, that's a different matter because that's not a debt. And our courts have always said that. A tax is an obligation. It's not a debt. There's no contract. If you live in a certain place and they're doing a certain thing and they want you to pay taxes on your activity, that's not a debt. That's where they bring guns and whips and clubs and stuff and make you pay the tax. Throw you in jail if you don't, whatever. But a debt is according to contract. Taxes are not according to contract. All of the talk you hear otherwise, notwithstanding, they are not. They never have been, and I don't see how they ever could be. A tax is not a result of contract. It is the result of enforced, and when I say enforced, I mean force. And for the force of the government telling you what you're going to give them, whether you like it or not. And that's not to say it's always right. It isn't in many cases. The government abuses that quite a bit. It's been my experience and observation. Well, let's see what else we got here, and we'll try to finish this particular clause. A state can require gold and silver coin to satisfy debt. All they have to do in such a case, if they make that legal tender and you owe $500, is tender, offer out, hold out $500 worth of gold, and if they don't take it, they can't force you to give them greenbacks or anything else. Indeed, here's another thing about freedom of contract, because that's in this clause too. Did you see that up there where it said that, let me read it, no state shall make any law impairing obligation of contracts. Well, what does that mean? Well, pretty straightforward. If a contract's already in place, no state government or no government can pass a law or put forth some kind of a decree voiding contracts. For example, let's say that there are contracts all over the state of New York, and the people made all sorts of contracts that require payment of debt in gold and silver by contract. And the state government down in Albany or over in Albany says, we're gonna do away with all contracts. We're declaring null and void all contracts that require gold or silver to pay the debt of the contract. The Constitution of the United States says that's unlawful. State governments can't do that. Well, what else did that mean? Well, it means this. Don't miss this. State governments have no power, no jurisdiction anywhere in the United States to declare bankruptcy, to hold bankruptcy courts, to deal with bankruptcy. Bankruptcy, according to our Constitution of the United States, is the exclusive jurisdiction of the federal courts. Why? Because bankruptcy is by definition the power to impair an obligation of contract. You've got a debt and you can't pay it, or debts and you're so deep you'll never get out, so you go to a bankruptcy court. It's going to be a federal court, a federal bankruptcy court. There are no state bankruptcy courts in America because they're against the law. Now, why is that? Well, there's a historic reason. It has to do with the war and the war debt of the Revolution, the war of separation from Britain. But even beyond that, the state governments and state courts, if they could impair obligations of contract, they could do away with a fundamental freedom. A contract is freedom of association. You associate with another person in agreement, in an exchange of promises. That's association. So the state governments don't have that power. Well, then you say, well, then why do the federal governments have the federal courts, the federal government through the federal courts have the power to do away with contract obligations? That's what bankruptcy is, doing away with contract obligations, giving you protection from debts. Show me a debt, I'll show you a contract. Show me a contract, I'll show you a debt. They're both words for the same relationship, contract relationship. Well, the reason the federal government can do it is because that's what the Bible says should be done. And I'm in good company when I say that, because Supreme Court Justice Joseph Story makes a point of that. And he says if we didn't have that someplace in our country, somehow, for the debtor that cannot get out from under debt, we have reverted to ancient barbarism that is contrary to the first principles of Christadom, D-O-M, not D-U-M-B. Christendom, in other words, Christianity. And Story acknowledges there never has been a time in that same set of writings, there never has been a time that Christianity did not lie at the foundations of our common law. Our Constitution is a brief of common law government. Our common law is our law. It is our Constitution constituted among us. It's the only way we can understand our Constitution. The Supreme Court has said that. And bankruptcy is in spirit, a fulfillment, an attempt to reach the relief that the year of Jubilee of the law of Moses in the Bible institutes, where under that law, every 50 years, all debts are canceled. All debts, all contracts for indentured servanthood are canceled. All land reverts to its original owner if it's mortgaged. That's what God said. And if we don't do something, said Joseph Story, to give that kind of protection, because money has a way of migrating into powerful hands, him what has gets more. That's true. The Bible acknowledges that. Jesus Christ said, to him who has shall be given, and to him who has not, even that which he has shall be taken away. That's not, that's just a statement of law. That's the way it works among sinful mankind. He was stating that. The Old Testament stated it. That's why Jesus Christ was reiterating that principle from the year of Jubilee. It's a law among sinful men. It's the way things are. And we must provide relief if we're going to be a decent country. How do you be a decent country? You have to be a Christian country. There is no decency in the world outside of Jesus Christ, period. And there's no honor, by the way, and there's no dignity. There's only hell. Hell on earth, and it gets worse afterwards, after this life. Bankruptcy is an important part of that. And the reason it's another reason it's exclusive to the general government and not the state governments, because if it were in the states had that power, here's what they would do. And they had this happen under the Confederacy. The states would set up their bankruptcy courts, and they would eliminate all money owed to people from other states. That way the money would stay in their states, because people wouldn't be paying it out of their state to enrich people in other states. Well, that wasn't going to work, so they had to make it a national matter, and that's why federal courts have the power to do away with, to impair by their actions, the obligations of contracts. We do have a special set of federal courts called bankruptcy courts, but that power is not prohibited to a lot of courts. I've been in cases, criminal cases, where men were sent off to jail that had many contract obligations to fulfill. I remember one fellow had a trucking company. He had a lot of obligations of contract to fulfill. And he argued in court, let me fulfill my obligations until I can get somebody in place that can fulfill them for me before you send me to prison. Give me some time. Judge said, nope, you're going to prison. Now, was that judge a jerk? You bet he was a jerk. In my opinion, that could be an impeachable offense. Get him off the bench. But he did not break the law in doing it. But he did something that wasn't right, and it shouldn't be done, and they do it consistently. We've set up bankruptcy courts for that purpose, and that's where that should happen. But the reason state courts, again, don't have that authority under our Constitution, state courts, state governments, impairing obligation of contract, is because they would tell everybody in their state they didn't have to pay debts to people in other states. Well, I was hoping I'd get through this, but I've been talking about long enough, so I'm going to quit because I've got more to go. I haven't got halfway through my comments on this point. So, John, back okay. to you, and thank you again for the time.
Thank you, Brent. Appreciate it. Okay, we're going to go over to questions and answers. Anybody's got a comment or anything, get into the queue, star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. We'll take our first caller. 850 area code. We're going to unmute you in a second. Maybe you can give us your first name and your state. 850-496. What's your
hey
first
John,
name?
Hey, John, Jeff.
State?
Hi, John. Jeff called. I'm just using my phone. How are you?
Jeff from New York anyway, so go ahead.
What are you limiting the talk to on this call?
Whatever you want.
Okay, good. Okay. I'm in the very unique situation of 5 years ago filing a lawsuit, a civil matter, as a plaintiff, and convincing the judge, who has long retired, to give me poor person's relief. I went through a trial, a non-jury trial, and the judge, who was totally inappropriately acting all through the case, it was obvious that he didn't want me to win. But, you know, I mean, the facts were in my favor.
Did you originally ask for a trial by jury?
No, I decided not to, because it was going to be real complicated, and I didn't think a jury would ever keep up with it. And I made the right decision. I won the trial, hands down. All the facts are in my favor. I recorded the entire trial, and I'm expecting that one day when I get the transcripts, they're going to be modified, and I'm hoping that, you know, the shit's going to hit the fan at that point. But what I didn't expect is that the judge that issued a decision on the trial abruptly retired, and he is a very close personal friend of Felix Katina, who is now the chief administrative judge. And I can just tell you the facts. The facts are that everyone involved is telling me the order that Judge Riley signed, giving me, you know, waiving all the fees, does not apply to the trial transcripts. However, if you were to read
I'm sorry, I missed that point. What doesn't apply to the transcripts?
Judge Riley gave me what's called a poor person's relief order 5 years ago before he retired. And what that means is, and actually, you can go to the newyorkcourts.gov website and you can see exactly what it means, which in part makes this whole thing, you know, really concerning, you know, to any citizen that cares about the dishonesty of our courts. If you go on their website, you'd see that what that says is, it's a real short sentence. It says, with a fee waiver, you won't have to pay court costs for starting a case, filing a jury demand, appealing a court decision, and getting a transcript of the trial. So what's happening, though, is that because Katina is friends of the judge who issued a court order that cannot possibly and is not at all consistent with the record against me, they're all in collusion. I mean, it's obvious. And I just don't really know what to do, because I've called and emailed the Schenectady County Sheriff. I told him I want to have chief court clerk arrested, because this is a crime. No response. I've notified the chief administrator.
Well, you know, I think this is going to be too complicated for the program. Why don't we speak privately? Maybe I don't know that I could do anything this week, but anytime next week, maybe you can connect with me and we can talk. And you got my Skype. You can Skype me. And you're on Skype, right?
You know, I haven't. I haven't been on in a long time. I was involved in a horrific car accident like almost 3 years ago, so I've almost been out of commission. But I'm kind of getting back in now, and But I'll find you one way or another. But
yeah, you catch up with me on, and you know, and I got my Skype number. You know, I think you got my cell number, don't you?
Yes, I do. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, give me a call next week or something, and then we'll move the call over onto Skype. Okay, because it's much more easier for me to talk on Skype, and then we can discuss some of these details. I can see what's going on. But I will say, you know, anybody that in today's environment, to trust the judge to judge anything these days is just a very dangerous thing to do. Especially if you're going up against the government or up against some big corporation, because the judge is always going to go on that other side. You will find that the fact that when you come in as a in your own person, let's say, in personam, and you come into court that way, and the other side has an attorney, again, bias sets in, and they're going to rule for the other side almost probably. Very rarely will they take the other direction, because the corruption in the court is that big, that bad, and everything's a favor back and forth, judges to lawyers, and taking care of the status quo with the corporations and the government. So it's just total corruption. So on this side of things, I would anything, even if a little thing, I would take it to a jury trial automatically. You know, and if you get the, if you lay it out and your case very clearly, you know, summary judgments are permissible in a court of record for, you know, under the common law in order to get rid of a nuisance. So if it becomes so clear, you can then move the court for a summary judgment because it is just so clear. And, of course, if they refuse to do it, then you got to go forward into another way. But let's talk about this off of this court. It's just too much. You know?
Okay, that's fine. On these mailings that we're doing, with you know that you talked about first in this evening,
right.
I wonder if it's possible. I mean, I'm doing some of them for Jan. I just I hate to have him do this with every single one of us. I sent an email just trying to look for clarification as to exactly what he means by scanning. I think I know what he means, but. You know, I just thought I'd throw
we'll
that
set,
out there.
We'll set something up on the internet so that people can download exactly what that's talking about. But basically, it's priority mail. If you go down to the post office and you ask for the priority mail folder
container.
Or cardboard container. And it's $7.49, okay?
Yes.
But on that, when you fill that out, on the one side where you put the addresses on, the return address and the address it's going to, on the bottom left-hand corner, there's a barcode and a number. So we need a copy before that's mailed of that barcode with the addresses, and then that's in our record showing that we had sent it. Okay?
Okay, and that makes sense. I have a post office account, so I'm just going to go online and, you know, input all of the data that Jan has provided me. I'll print a label for each of the ones I'm doing, and then I'll have a PDF copy, so that's easy.
Yeah, before you mail it, we do need that filing number, and we need the address, whose it's being sent to, and our return address. And the grand jury's return address should be on that. And
I'm not sure. I don't think I've seen that in any of the emails. I assumed I'm not using my address, so that was my last question.
Right,
if we can make sure that we have that.
Yeah, but remember, this is coming from the grand tribunal of the court. This is where it's coming from, which is the grand jury also, because the grand jury has become the trial court because it's just these are extraordinary times with extraordinary. You know, problems and situations, and it needs to be dealt with, and we're dealing with it the way our founding of this nation was dealt with. We're doing it the same way. We need to get rid of all these people because Congress will not impeach these people. The United States Supreme Court, they know. They've been told many times, many, many times in the past 20 years, going back to 2004, and actually 2001, 2004, 2008, and now with our papers that we started in 2015, the court case in 2017, I think it was the starting of that, no, 2016, December 2016, we have told them, and we've made it clear, that there is subversion by enemies both foreign and domestic, and we laid it out, and they've done nothing. They have not gone. They've got the oversight. They are the authority over the judiciary, and the judiciary is out of control, and they are not correcting them. So they are going to be held accountable, too. If they don't step up and do the right thing, we will start indicting also United States Supreme Court justices. If that's what we have to do, and Congress, because Congress is incapable of doing it, but the people can do it, we got to do something.
Yes, we do.
And that's where we're going.
It's our responsibility, for sure.
Yep.
All right. Thank you, John. I really appreciate it. I yield. Thanks an awful lot. I appreciate talking to you. Talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks. We'll talk to you next week.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Cynthia, you got the mic. Go right ahead. How you doing, Cynthia?
Oh, hi, John. How are you from Massachusetts?
Yep.
I just wanted to I listened to the draft you read, and I was literally crying. I was just so inspired. I just want to convey that. I'm going to be praying, and I can't. It's so beautiful, and I just hope it spreads like wildfire. And
that's up to us to do.
Yes.
The people have got to do this. I don't want anybody spread the draft around. But once the final paper is up there, that'll be up there sometime this week, And then we'll send an email, and it'll say it's the final. This is it. And it'll be portrayed in a very much different way. It'll be in a PDF with cover sheets and everything. That's the one you want to send to everyone, news medias, whether it's newspaper, TV, radio. You want to send it out to everywhere. Just get it out to everybody.
Well, just let us know when the final copy is up, you know, and, you know, I'll be praying for it. I'm so happy. I'm just, God bless you all. I just can't say that enough. It's been 10 years for me, you know, going through all of this systemic corruption, human trafficking, whatever the heck this crap is, you know.
They have destroyed so many lives.
Yes, yes, and I know there's so many, you know, so I'm standing, you know, you're standing for all of us, you know, so that's such a blessing, and I feel so hopeful. I'm going to do my part, and I just wanted just a couple of things. One is that area of consent. And, you know, you're very clear, you know, it's all of this has to be with the consent of the people. And
correct.
I think what they're doing, they're going in through deception. They're going by this whole presumption and implied consent and presuming we consent to this nightmare because we, got a birth certificate or signed up for Social Security, that we subrogated our unalienable rights for benefits or, you know, safety, security.
But remember, that's all for their comfort. That doesn't apply to us. It doesn't mean anything. Where we have to challenge and tell them we don't consent is when we get pulled into court. When we get pulled into any court, whether it's on, you know, a village court, town court, county court, state court, even a federal court, if they pull us into any court using statutes, okay, to apply upon the people, then that is not a court of record. They have no power, no authority. They do not have jurisdiction over the people. You can challenge jurisdiction, and it could be easily proven whether they're going to acknowledge and deal with it. That's a whole different thing. And that's where the power comes in to bring your cases collectively to join with us. Because we will apply justice accordingly. We will give them the opportunity, plenty of opportunity. We've laid out a plan and a program to give these people the opportunity to obey the law, to acknowledge the law, and to, you know, look at, if you want to bring something up against an individual and you think you got a case, and open up a court of law, call for a grand jury if it's a criminal thing, and let's deal with it in a court of law. But they refuse to do it because they know they can't, and they're going to lose it. They can't pull a mortgage deal in there. They cannot shut down a mortgage. These nonjudicial foreclosures, they have to go with a nonjudicial process. They're not going to do anything with habeas corpuses because most people are in habeas corpuses under statutory, for statutory reasons. 90% of them have done something to break one of their stupid codes and statutes. And they're applying that again, and especially on the town level, the village level, and the county level. And, and they know they can't defeat them either because they got to throw them out. And that's why they ignore it. And they think that they're protected. Well, we're going to let them know protection is no longer available for them. It may take them a while to figure it out, but they don't have that protection no more. Deep state is going down.
Yeah, well, the spirit of arrogance is just like, it's just overwhelming. You know, what they've gotten away with and what they're doing to, you know, individuals and families. I mean, it's just so way off the, you know, it's so abnormal. It's so bizarre. You know, the stories, my situation and many stories that I hear, it's like, it's unbelievable just how arrogant these people are. You know, that's taken over, you know, positions of trust, you know, that we've entrusted them with, you know.
Right.
So I just want to just, you know, that area of consent. I don't know if you can just maybe even footnote, you know, imply consent is no consent, you know, is no consent. Just.
Well, look at the consent. Is this. Here's the consent. Listen. Here's where consent is or isn't, okay?
Mm-hmm.
When you go into court, okay, and they bring a statute against you, okay, because that's what they're going to pull you in under statutes. If they get a grand jury indictment, Well, the first question, you just look at the indictment and you'll see a list of statutes, and it's a statutory grand jury. It has nothing to do with me, okay? I never agreed to this system of law. The only system of law that we, the people, ever agreed to is the law of the land and the law of God. So we're in a court of law, a court of justice, where no statutes apply, okay, with the exception of the people who have contracted with them. Now, who has contracted with them? You know, it depends on which. Let's take on the federal level. You have U.S. Titles, okay? And each one of these titles identify with part of the government. It could be here's the law for the president that he has to follow, and where his powers and authorities are, and they've laid that out in a certain title. And then there's the laws for the FBI and all the different agencies. Okay, so when they took on a job and they took an oath. Okay, or even got employed without an oath, but was employed, they now have agreed in participating in a contract agreement that if they break the rules, the regulations, the statutes, the codes applied upon them, because they've been given authority, so they have certain codes that are applied upon them, then they are liable to them. That's where the contract is. We, the people, have no contract with the government. The government owes us nothing, and we owe them nothing. Well, the government owes their allegiance to the people and to protect and to serve, the people, the Constitution, and so on. Of course, they do have something to do, but the people don't owe anything to the government. Period.
Right. Thank you. That's
okay.
That's very clarifying. So I'll wait for the final copy to go out. I just want to thank you all.
Jan will keep everyone abreast on that, and he'll let everyone know and post. We'll have it posted, and with the and Jan will email copies to people as far as the addresses that they're going to be sending out. He's got a plan worked out, whatever it is. Okay.
I got an email today, and it was really quite clear. I just also want to mention if there could be a telephone number provide it as we, work on this, just in case there's some kind of glitch or some kind of issue or anything. I mean,
you can call Jan up. Jan's number's under the directory.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
He may not be much available in the next day or two because he's going away for day or two, but he should be back, I think, Thursday.
Right.
And
okay.
So everybody should be prepared or getting prepared. Go get the envelopes from the from the post office. Just go down and get the priority envelopes. And you can even ask them if this is the one that costs $7.49, because that's what it is. Mm-hmm. And it'll take the 50 or so pages. The paper's going to be a total of about 54, 56 pages, roughly.
Okay, that's good. So, that's manageable. And I just want to mention, like, years ago when all this systemic targeting was happening, and, I felt really alone, and I was praying to God so hard and everything, and I kept hearing in my spirit, "Where are my children? Where are my children?" And that just came to me as I was listening to what you were reciting earlier, and it just brought it home. So I do pray. It's righteous. It's true. It's a light shining in darkness, and I believe that from the bottom of my heart. And I just really hope and pray. The American people can just, so many people are suffering. So many people are suffering. And even those who are not or on the verge, everybody knows something is really wrong going on in this country. And I just think you shine a light on it, and it's just full of hope. So we're just going to stand in faith. I'm going to stand in faith because whatever is true and noble, you stand behind it no matter what. So I just want to thank you all for your hard work and persistence. It's been years, but you just stayed the course, and I just want to thank you again. God bless you.
I appreciate that. Thank you, Cynthia. Okay, we're going to take our next caller.
The priority mailer you're talking about is the cardboard one. They also have a plastic one. That's $8. The cardboard one is $7.35. and it says flat rate envelope on it. So you can throw anything from lead weights to feathers in there.
Yeah, I was told $7.49 when I went down to the post office. I wonder why it's a different price.
Pennsylvania does it. Yeah, Pennsylvania does it cheaper, I guess.
They must have sold that part. They must have sold that part of the U.S. post office to some other corporation, then, foreign entity.
They must have. Must have. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So anyway, but you got everything under control, and people need to understand. And everybody needs to understand this. You know, you're acting on behalf of the jury as the tribunal. That's what we are as the people here, and you're sending it out in that name. So the return address on that paper, on that envelope, must be the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury with the address, the Valhalla address we have. It's a P.O. box, and then, of course, it goes to whoever it's going to go to, whatever judge or individual it's going to go to. And again, we need that picture. If someone has to take a picture because they don't, maybe they just got a smartphone or something. And if you're going to take a picture, it's got to be legible. We got to be able to read those numbers on the bottom left-hand corner and be able to see the address. And if we can't get a clear picture of that with a snapshot, a picture, you're going to have to go to Staples or something and run it through a copy machine there, or have it mailed out from there, scan it and mail it out, or whatever you want to do. So, but anyway, we need that number with the address of whoever's being served. Okay, let's go to our next caller. It looks like, I'm not sure how to pronounce this, Camara, Arizona?
It's Camara.
Camara, how you doing, Camara?
I'm well, how are you?
Good, thank you. Go right ahead.
After last week's conversation on what to do, I'm working on that. But at the same time, it was so wonderful because Jim, in our talk, he confirmed what I already knew I was about to do. And it felt so good to send that email saying, you're fired.
Yeah.
It was part of me realizing that it's in my mind where I'm free.
All right. Well, I'm not sure of the specifics on that, but we appreciate it. And Jim's working hard to get everything together for anybody who's joining us.
Yes,
and,
thank you very much.
And we will be doing that for the months to come. Until we, the people, get into the courts and take control, we will continue to do it from the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury. And as we establish the true administrations of the people within the courts across this nation in every county, until we establish those places, and then those people will be responsible for what needs to take place in the courts. And we'll be here always for advice. But until the other counties get through, we'll continue to serve that place keeping pushing towards getting things opened. And again, look, we only need to win this on the federal level because the state level is not a problem at all once we control what needs to be controlled in the federal courts and the right of the people to be in charge and in control of their courts of law. I mean, just think about it. The only government individual, other than maybe a prosecutor, of course, but any government individual is a magistrate, and a magistrate can't make any decisions. He's there as an administrator to administrate the process, to sign off on what the jury's decisions are and put the seal on it and push it out for execution and to enforce it. That's the government magistrate, the agent to take care of that business. But as far as what goes on in that court, whether starting from the grand jury, whether they should be indicted or not, that's up to the people to decide, untainted. And as far as the decision in the court, that's for the people to decide, the tribunal, the jury. They get to decide the law. They get to decide the facts of the case. And they also get to decide how to restore the individual. They get to decide all of it. No government agent is to involve themselves in that, okay? But this is the uphill battle, and this is where we need to get to. When we get this going in the federal courts, it'll be easily pressed down into the state courts, and we will start the administrations within the counties, moving them along. Okay. Anything else before we move on to the next person?
No, no, I just wanted to say thank you so much because I'm growing being a part of this group and I'm learning. And
appreciate it.
It feels very good with my soul, and I thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Cody from Illinois, you got the mic. Anybody else wants to get into the queue? There's only a few people in the queue. Star 6 and I think a 1. Star 6 and a 1 to get into the queue. Cody, Illinois, you got the mic.
Yeah, good evening from the soon-to-be American Venezuela state here with the way they're doing everything here in this state. But actually, I just found an interesting YouTube video from John Mark on propertarianism. I was curious if you guys had ever heard that term. I guess it's some tech guy that's kind of came up with a new theory of how to, you know, basically property rights, you know, everything from your culture to your neighborhood they're considering is a form of property, in that when the government, you know, brings in so many incompatible or low IQ immigrants or whatever, that, you know, they consider that a form of, you know, damaging the property rights of the culture. That was, you know, that was one point. It goes on many other points. I'm just curious if you guys ever ran across it. It's kind of interesting, all the different points they bring up.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. What's the website? Is there a website, or what's the YouTube?
Yeah, this guy's, it's probably easier on YouTube. It's John Mark Says, I think, or John Mark is his YouTube. But
Okay.
It's proper, it's like property, but so propertarianism, I think, .com is the group that came up with the theory, and John, like, you know, just kind of reports on it, but he does a really good job of explaining it better than, it's a little more technical, the other website, so it's better to look at YouTube. But it's just really interesting because they bring up, you know, a lot of the things, you know, that everybody's concerned about nowadays of, you know, your rights being trampled on, how they really should be considered a property right and protected by the Constitution. And so I was just,
well, remember, you know, we use the phrase unalienable right. It's given by God, and so it's an unalienable right that is protected by the Constitution.
Yeah.
So,
well, there was that Chris Ann Hall. She's a lawyer that's got some interesting, you know, constitutional
videos. Yeah, we're familiar with her.
Also.
Yeah, she's very good. We've got some of her videos. I believe we have a lot of her videos, or some of the videos, up on our website. So she's very good, yeah.
Well, the thing I was going to bring up about her is she brought up how talking about, you know, gun rights, that's a property right. And she said, you know, people kind of, they want to forget that, you know, that you should consider the gun right also a property right. Yeah.
Well,
so anyway, just kind of these two different videos came together just by coincidence this weekend. I just thought I'd turn some people on to it. That's about all I had. If somebody else got
when people want to believe in something and discuss something and share something, you know, let's say they like socialism or Nazism or communism or whatever it is that they like, you know, and they can talk about it and do it. It's free speech and so on and so forth, as long as they don't incite any violence in their process. But when an individual becomes an elected individual, even, and if that is some of their tendencies to lean towards those things, all those things are destructive to our form of government. It's destructive to our republic. It is destructive to our Constitution, plain and clearly. And so when they get up there and they want to change the Constitution, they want to get these gun laws in there, they want to prevent people from having an assault weapon, a rifle or whatever. They want people to be permitted or licensed, which a lot of us are, and we shouldn't have to be, and we're going to do away with that eventually. But until then, you know, we have to deal with what we got to deal with. But in any event, when they get up there and they swear an oath to serve and protect that Constitution, and they now have a duty to do exactly not that, and not to bring forth some legislation or ideas or trying to gather people together using you know, their position in power to go up against a change of a Constitution that's not possible. And the changes in the Constitution that's not possible is number one, okay, looking at the structure of the Constitution itself, there is a balance of power written in our Constitution, and it cannot be changed. And it is almost completely the entire Constitution in itself, Articles 1 all the way through 6 or 7. 7, of course, is the, you know, when they finalized for the Constitution and signed off on it. But, you know, all of these articles really cannot be really changed. So when they went and did the 17th Amendment, for instance, they changed, they destroyed the balance of power. They took away the sovereignty of the state. They don't have the right of suffrage in the Senate, and therefore they have no say in what the federal government does. They just got to obey, and they become the slave to the federal government. And on the 16th Amendment, done the same thing to the people, made us slaves. We labor for foreign bankers, okay? So all of that, okay, was unlawful. But even worse than that, okay, if there could be a worse than that, when they go up against the Second Amendment, that's not even debatable. That's an unalienable right. There is absolutely nothing to talk about. And anybody who goes up against that definitely, without a doubt, needs to be, they need to either repent and change their way and lift back up the Constitution, or they need to resign, or they need to be, you know, thrown out of office through the Congress itself. They need to impeach them, or we the people will indict them. So whatever choice they want, they can have. But that's the facts of the matter. They also don't have the right to be silent. When I see these people going up before Congress and these agencies and they plead the Fifth, who the heck are these people? I mean, Congress is so stupid that they don't even know to say to this person that you don't have a choice to plead silence. You're here because we've given you power. You've been given power and authority by the Constitution, and you're here to answer for your stewardship. You cannot plead. You can do this on a personal situation, but you cannot do on this where we've given you authority. And if they still refuse to answer, they should just send them out to get rid of the person, take the next person below them, and get the answers to the questions they want. But they don't even know enough to do that. But because they don't know the Constitution. Listen to these people. They have no clue. And if we don't know, how do we know that they don't know? See, that's a big problem, too. So we need to know it.
Yep.
And if a people expect to be ignorant and free, forget about it. It's not going to happen.
They expect what never was and never will be.
Amen.
So,
okay.
All right.
Anything else,
Thank
Cody?
You.
Thank you.
One other quick thing I might mention is, you know, until we can get better control, maybe we need to do like the Fiji people and get a lot, you know, try to get groups of people to hand out during court days at these different courthouses, like these Fiji type brochures, at least get these juries educated to keep people, you know, less likely to be abused.
Well, the problem is you go into the courts, if you go read the federal jurist handbook and the federal grand jury handbook, you'll find out that it's unlawful for the people to try to nullify a law or for anyone to try to let the jury know this. They will arrest you, okay? And so it's very difficult to do that. And, of course, that's a sin in itself. Right there proves who they are, you know. They have destroyed our way in the courts. But, you know, the only way we can deal with it is what we're doing right now. And we need to go into the hornet's nest, which is what we're doing. We've been doing it for 2 years now. And now is the time to put our spearhead right in.
So a friend of mine said he was handing out brochures years ago, federal courthouse in Atlanta. He said they shut down the courthouse that afternoon. They were handing out the Fiji flyers.
Yeah, these people are so evil.
They didn't arrest them, but they shut it down. That was interesting. But anyway, well, thanks a lot for all your work, guys. Have a great night.
Okay, thank you. We'll take our next caller. And by the way, anybody wants to get into the queue, *6 to get into the queue, *6 and a 1. Okay, our next caller is, I lost Stephen. Stephen was there and somehow I hit the button. Steve, if you want to get back into the queue, *6 and I'll pull you up. So I don't know how I lost him. So now we got Dan. Dan, you got the mic and I'll take Stephen next and Crystal.
Yes, great. Greetings to everyone, and as always, just absolutely so informative and enjoyable at the same time. I might have missed, but from what I saw that was sent out by our wonderful Mr. Jan, it was so very vivid in every which way with the instructions and everything. But I'm wondering, did I miss something, or is the package that you're talking about that's going to go in that paper priority mail, and I understand the instructions pretty well, but is the actual 50-some pages not yet been sent to us or in a PDF format?
Yeah, they're not ready yet, and I want to be, you know, cautious that the paper that we put up tonight for reading so that people can follow along is not the finished product. It doesn't have the cover sheets. It doesn't have all the necessary, the table of contents. It doesn't have all of the papers that have been filed into the court. Doesn't have, there's so much that's not added in. There's about 8 pages that's not added in. Also, it still has not been totally perfected, so it still needs some corrections. When I was reading through it, I seen at least maybe 5 or 6 things that need to be corrected in that paper. And over the course of the next few days, maybe we'll find 5 or 6 more. So please, that is not the paper. And Jan, I make it clear to these people that are going to do this not to take that paper and put it in. It's just not ready, and it's not properly packaged for serving. So,
Roger.
Go ahead.
I agree, and I hope I ask that question for a lot of others that would be maybe if it hadn't been covered, and if it had, I certainly plead sorry that I didn't hear the instructions, but I thought you did real well in explaining it just a few minutes ago. So we await, I guess, will it come in a, do you think it's going to come in a final, like a PDF format?
Yeah, it'll be final, a PDF format, either Wednesday or Thursday. We'll be posting it. When it gets posted, Jan will send out an email. I'll let Jan handle it. And when he sends out the email, he'll give the location of exactly where, the link to get to it. And then all you have to do is you know, just save the PDF to your computer and just print it from page 1 all the way through. Just print it out. Put a clip on it. I don't know if anybody's got a large enough stapler to staple it. It's going to be pretty thick, but some people do. I've got I could staple like an inch thick. But, you know, you could put paper clip on it, one of those large paper clips. Or
right.
One of them,
I saw that.
You know, spring
saw
clips
that.
On it in the top corner or whatever. But just clip the corner somehow. They are numbered. And put a clip on it. Just stick it in as it is. Okay, it'll be sealed. It'll have an ink seal on it and everything. Everything's just ready to go. All you have to do is put the addresses on and take the picture so we have the number and the address.
You just hit the right word there. Where, with me, you know that I've already professed that I would be glad to get this to the governor, but it's whatever you guys tell me that you would prefer, and are we going to get a certain mailing list for me.
Right. Dan will give you a mailing list, and it'll be laid out probably on a Word or maybe even a PDF. I don't know however he's going to plan it, but he'll give you a list. You could just really just print out the paper and then just
right.
cut the address off and tape it to the envelope. Also, he'll probably list out, if you're sending 5, he'll maybe list out the 5 return address, and again, just cut it out with a scissors and tape it where it belongs, and that's it. And it's, you know, at my post office, it's $7.49 for each mailing. Jan's telling me PA's a little different, and so it's about $7.
Okay, just final, because there might be somebody else who wants to ask questions, and I respect that. I know that is to wait. So final, for me, as I expressed many times, I would be glad to even send this maybe to some of the judges in New Hanover County or Brunswick County, and especially right on, if you want me to, state right on to the state governor's office if you have those kind of addresses, or please let Jan, you know.
Yeah, well, Jan's got the list. He'll go through it. I don't think he's going to piecemeal it to people to their own states, because that might become too difficult to do. But he's given them, like, if you're going to do 5, he'll give you 5 addresses. You know, if someone else is going to do 3, he'll give them 3 addresses, you know.
Right. Well, I might be able to do a little bit. I'm in both states. So I'm close to Myrtle Beach, South Carolina, so this is not an advertisement or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, I am in both states and pretty well known in both states, I guess, to some degree. So if it was for sending it on to the governor or the attorney general, maybe Jan and I will have a chance, or he'll instruct me somehow with some addresses or whatever. That's all I wanted to say there. Otherwise, you know, sort of yield here to other people.
All right. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Let's take on next caller. Looks like we lost Stephen again. I don't know where he's at, so we'll take Crystal next. Crystal, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Hello.
Hello, Crystal. Crystal, you got the mic. Go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you now. Go right ahead.
Okay. All right. Well, I guess you must have heard, everybody must have heard what happened. And they had checked me out of my house on last Wednesday. I did not know, the property was all my name, my warranty deed, and I told you how this attorney, Mark Klausner, terminated my name off my deed on a legal deed, which I filed the police report. And also, I filed with the CHRO, and I re-recorded and had the house back in my name. Well, they bought the fake marshal, and an attorney signed up for an ejection of my house on an application. And no one went back to look at the records because the property's in my name. Unbeknown to me, there must have been a couple of hundred people that came and they put me on, was a Facebook Live. And even one of the guys that are running for mayor for the Republicans, and I never knew that all these people were out there. People have been calling. Everybody's watching my case all over. And I was really shocked about the report, but I guess everybody was watching my case while I'm in the court, and when they saw me representing myself, and they all knew about National Degree of Mines, which I would tell everybody to tune in, so I didn't realize how many people were tuning in in L.A., because everybody had a piece of the pie, but most of all, a lot of the people knew me from when I worked in the assessors, and I helped people all over the state and all over it. I dealt with people with the life use and stuff like that all over the country. And it became overwhelming, but I never knew how many eyes were on me, and I was telling the people, and I said, well, everybody needs to know, well, how can anybody represent anyone if you don't know who is the highest in the land, which is the sheriff. And it just so happened that this past Saturday, last Saturday before, a friend of ours, he was a retired police officer, his mother had passed. And so there was a lot of police officers and everybody there that I knew, and a lot of them were retired. And not one of them, only one person in the law, because I was teaching them and they were following through. Nobody else knew. I said, well, how can you help and represent anybody if you don't even know that the sheriff is the highest of the land? And they had, the other ones had no jurisdiction. And when they started at first, I said, you know what? I said, since you're all retired, you all need to learn and go to your website and learn about National Liberty Alliance so you can learn the basics, And I said, so everybody is watching my case all over.
Well, what's the status of your house right now, though?
Well, when they came, because this guy, the attorney, stole my property, terminated my name off of my property on the legal date. So thank God I had filed a complaint. And they didn't want to file the complaint on him. And thank God I filed with the CHRO. But none of them went back to look and say, last name on the property is my name. So what they did, they had over seven the biggest U-Haul trucks, and he took all my stuff out. And I said, you will not touch me. He goes, this is not your house. You got to come off the property. So I, in turn, called the police to protect my constitutional rights, and they stuck up for, they had stuck up for the thief that stole my house. So then when I get say so all the people come in and people were filming and stuff like that. So everybody's watching. My case was problem.
Let me try to understand though now. Now you are no longer in your house at this moment.
Right, no, right.
Okay. And they have removed all your belongings, and what did they do with your belongings?
They put it in storage.
Okay. And you have a place to live at this moment? To stay?
Yeah, well, I'm with somebody, but as I said, they're watching my case all
okay.
over the country.
Why don't you talk with Jim, and let's get something going with us, what we're doing, and bring it in as a joinder.
Okay, listen to me. Okay, because I got all my stuff squared away already. So I guess probably today, somebody looked at the records, because when you look on the computer, it has their name. But the documents, which I sent you the papers,
Let me listen to what I have to say, okay? Let's say I had cancer. If I had cancer, okay, and especially if it was advanced cancer, I'm aware of about 5 different cures for cancer. I would do the shotgun effect. I wouldn't just say, well, let me try one and see what happens. If that don't work, I'll go to the next one. No, I'd do all of them, all at one shot, and try to deal with this cancer and get it under control, okay? Well, here you are. You got a lot of things that are going, but progressively they keep moving more and more, closer and closer, and now they've got you to the point where you're out of the house. Now they've taken your things and they put it into storage. You know, whatever you're doing, you should continue doing. But you should join your case to us. Let us work on it from this side, too. You can have 5, 6, 7 different ways to do things. Whichever one succeeds is the thing that will succeed, and that will be that. But what we will do, we will press for all, not only restitution, but damages, okay? You know, you need to get them, and we will push that through the court case, through your joinder, into our case with us also. We will press for that. So talk to Jim and get your case into into our case.
Okay, but I'm not going back under the jurisdiction.
We're taking it out of that jurisdiction. You fill out a joinder paper with Jim, and we're going to take it out of that court. We're going to move it into the federal court.
Okay, I'm going to talk this. I want to talk to you privately. Okay, I want to go over some things with you privately.
Okay, well, we can try to do that maybe on Thursday or Friday during the day, okay? The next couple of days,
we're
still tied up with printing and getting all these papers together. We got like about 80 indictments that we're putting together that we got to get filed into the case on Wednesday or Thursday. A lot of paperwork to do, but you can try to get me through Jan. Jan's going away, okay, but he'll be back, I think he said, Thursday afternoon. So try Jan on Thursday, maybe about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, see where he's at, and then connect me with you, and then we'll try to pull Jim into the call, and we'll see what we can do.
Okay, and I'm going to send you over the paperwork, okay?
Okay. You're going to send it through the regular way you've been doing it, through fax or family?
Yeah, we could do that. Oh, yeah, because everybody, and it blew me up the water. I couldn't believe, even the guy who was running, he's a Republican, he's running for mayor. I didn't even know. Everybody's been quiet. And what happened, the police told them they cannot trespass on my property. They would be arrested. Well, it's my property, and, it's... They took everything out, and I'm like, they're baffled.
These people, we have done, I believe we've done a paper for you at an earlier time for an information crime. So that judge, if you want to check with
the judge.
We're indicting that judge, okay? So that judge is already under, listen to me, please. That judge is already under indictment because your paper is in. But in order for us to pull your papers in to this court case, you need to do a joinder. We can't join a case without you requesting to join. You know, we can't do it.
Okay.
So you've got to do that. And then from that point forward, we're going to do all the work for you. The only thing you'll do is the mailing. Okay, we'll do all the paperwork for you and everything else, and we'll go after them. They don't have jurisdiction over you to begin with. It's a Nisi Prius court. They denied your due process. They've stolen your – you know, this has really become a huge crime because they've used the judicial machinery in order to steal your property and carry your property away as well as you to jurisdictions unknown. I mean, look, this is serious. And we can get these people, we can go after them.
I want to say something to you. So as a result, when they realized everybody was watching them and people were recording them, they told me, I'm on YouTube, I'm on Facebook. I said, I am not leaving my house. And I said, you are trespassing. They told me I cannot go back in my house. I said, where is the sheriff? And I said, this is my house. And you see the sign on my house. And I am not. I said, what are you going to do? I am a total disabled elderly person whose home is never even paid for. I've owned property for 39 years. This is my house and I want you on my property. Well, all of a sudden, all the police came. I said, well, I called the police. Well, the police were on their side. Well, guess what? I said, you are all trespassing. So what they did, all the people that I saw that in the bear, I said, I'm going in my house to get my medicine. And he goes, well, you can't go in your house. There's no one in there. I said, stop me. What are you going to do? Drag me, beat me, and take my property? This is my house, and I have my warranty deed. Well, and so they looked at me, and they were all looking at each other, didn't know what to do, and I walked back into my house. Well, guess what? They said, well, you have 15 minutes. I said, I need help, and this is my house. So the brothers, one of the brothers got a U-Haul truck. They got over nine huge trucks. I guess they figured they would come and steal. And I said, I know someone broke in my house. I said, I know every single thing. And I got to look at everything, and I know. And so then they called and said, oh, somebody broke in. Do you know? I said, it's not my problem. You are in charge of all this. You know, we've got 15 days. Guess what? They want to take everything down. Let them take it. Guess what? This is all criminal. And the good thing that I have a police report about this crazy attorney. They don't want to arrest them. And this is in the CHRO, and people are dealing with this case all over, okay? So I'm just giving you the information as of, you know what, because now when the idiots went back and said, oh, shit, she owns a house. You know what I'm saying? So
let's get into more details privately so that we can, you know, go back and forth with questions and, you know, because, you know, at this point there's too much information going on this and it's not going to benefit the people, but. Okay, but get in touch. Like, if we can't get together for some reason Thursday afternoon, because again, Jan will be traveling Thursday, expected to be home Thursday, then let's do it Friday morning. I should be available in the morning Friday.
But I'm going to get everything over to you.
I have a chiropractic appointment at 10:30, so I'll be home by 11 the latest. Okay. So we can deal with it on Friday if we don't deal with it on Thursday. But let's do it then, because then you know, we can be constructive. We can take notes, and we'll have other minds listening in on this and working on this. And maybe, Francine, if you're listening, maybe you can be part of this too. So we'll pull in Francine and Jim. Jan will pivot the call and pull me in and Jim and Francine, and I already have you in the call, and we'll see what we can do, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, and... And everybody, I told everybody, you know, because people are living, tuning in and listening.
Let's make sure we have the names of the individuals that were relentless with you, whether it be a lawyer or the CEO or whoever it is. Get their names, too, because we're going to pursue them. When we look at the paperwork, we'll consider them for an indictment also. You know, again, we may have to, we did get an agreement by the grand jury on these cases for an indictment, so that's predetermined already. And we're not necessarily chasing the CEOs and the lawyers at this point in time, but that doesn't mean we're not going to. It's just that we don't have the time to do it. We're going after the judges first. And as we get time, we're going to go after the other individuals that created these plans to steal all these properties from the people, and they're just enriching themselves off the pain and suffering, mostly of the elderly, because they are going after the older people.
Exactly.
They can't defend themselves. And but in your case, we'll lift this guy right up with the judge. Let's take a look at what we're doing and discuss it, okay?
And listen, this is the thing I love to do. I said, first of all, it was an application for ejectment. No judge signed off on it. It was an attorney that signed off for the ejectment. So
right,
I didn't even know that.
It's a non-judicial foreclosure. That's the whole point. No due process. That is the problem. That is their sin, and that's where they're going to be destroyed.
And this is what this other one, his name is Judas Epstein, who's been stealing people's house up here for 4 cents, and he bought a huge mansion in Florida. But I guess he fooled the coop. A lot of them are now flying the coop. So, okay.
All right. Well, let's
just talk
Thursday or Friday, all right?
Okay, have a good night, everyone.
All right. Thank you, Crystal. God.
And guess what? It's on Facebook, so anybody can find it. Okay, and it's still live.
I'm sorry, say that again?
What happened to me last Wednesday is all on Facebook. Everybody's watching it live. That's why I called it to you. So, but they were very cordial after all that. Are you kidding? They were all cordial after that. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Talk to you later the week.
Good night.
Okay, let's take our next caller, Stephanie from South Dakota. It looks like you got the mic. And by the way, Stephen was in before. I don't see him back in. I don't know if he thinks he's in the queue, but you can get back in the queue. We only got one other person in the queue right now. So if anybody wants to get into the queue, star 6, we may be able to get more people. Stephanie, go right ahead.
Well, actually, this is Kurt.
Oh, Stephen?
No, Kurt.
Kurt, okay. You're coming in as Stephanie. Is that your wife or something?
Right.
Okay,
right,
go ahead.
Anyway, I was going to talk about, but now I'm listening to you guys and all these people calling in about, so you're going into the court in their arena and playing in their game.
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. Court case is over. We're making our decisions. It's a court of record. We opened up and filing in the court for 2 years, been copying the Attorney General, been copying the President of the United States, and going after the judiciary and Congress, both houses. They haven't responded to anything, but in any event, it's all been recorded under the auspices of the court, acting as the grand jury, coming in as now the trial jury, and now we're coming in with our decision. And it's a matter of the people demanding the law to be obeyed, because that's what it is. I don't know if you were here earlier. We read the paper, one-third of the paper that we'll be filing. Next week we're going to read another third, and the week after that we'll read another third. It's about 50 pages. But if you missed that, you might want to go and download the recording.
I did hear it. I did. And I guess my question is, we're going after common law. And
we opened up a natural law court, period. We opened up a natural law court. We used the statutory process to do the filings. Okay, and now we're filing the decision. We've been in court for 2 years, filing papers. 200 papers we have filed. Okay, and they have acquiesced every single time, and they are guilty of sin. They all need to resign. So we're offering them the last opportunity. Okay, that last opportunity of mercy, to start working with the people, obeying the law, and reinstate the law in the courts, and step aside and let the people take control and reopen the courts of record, because there hasn't been one open I can say definitely within the last 20 years there hasn't been one open, okay, and probably a lot longer than that.
Yeah, no, and I've been listening to you, John, for over 2 years, and you know, as this moves on, nothing's really happened other than.
Well, it can't until the decision is made. The decision is now being made. The court is coming to a conclusion and demanding to look at. We've been clear on paper, okay? We haven't been very clear on exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it, but we've been clear on paper as we've been progressing along. And we opened up the statutory court. We got a statutory number in order to file to be under the auspices of the court. We have filed almost 200 documents, plus we have filed a couple of indictments. And when the judge came into the case to make a decision, we indicted him. We sent him, told him he didn't have the power and the authority, and he couldn't make it. We overruled his decision, and then we had to indict him because he came back in again. And even though he did that, and he did that almost a year ago, about 8 months ago or something, it's been a while ago, we're still sending papers, and they're still taking them because the clerk better have the fear, and we presume they have the fear of sending it back. The judge won't go into the file to just send it back. He'll tell the clerk. And the clerk is probably frightened and should be because we will indict that clerk also. And even though they think it's not going to go anywhere, well, we got 100 more indictments to file. And then we got more after that. We'll probably have hundreds of more. And we'll have many more papers. And at some point, the collapse will take place. And we do know that we have the administration on our side, or at least for the idea of what we're doing. They already said the same words we said in this paper about the right to change the servants, to get rid of them, and to bring in new guards. And after we've been speaking about that, then we have Q talking about it. So maybe they're listening to us. Maybe it's a coincidence, but we're on the same track they're on. But I'll tell you what, it's impossible for America to be saved. It's impossible to bring America back unless the people take control by consenting to their government. And they consent to their government by controlling the courts, saying no to the government, we're not going to indict these people. Well, yes, we will. And we're not going to allow them to come in and puppetize these juries. They taint these juries. They already got them guilty before they even start. They hit them up with statutes, and that's how they get them. Well, there's no statutes in a court of law. Unless they've got a contract and they're under that contract, if they're under Article 5 or Article, what not Article, Title 5 or whatever title in a federal level, then they have to abide by certain rules as far as statutes are concerned. But the people are not under such. So we have went forward and we've explained, we even filed a paper to explain exactly what we're doing in the court and how we've done it. And now we are filing the decision, okay? But in the process of filing the decision, because we've been in a statutory process as far as filing our papers and serving our papers, okay, we are now sending another paper to open up the common law court for the sole purpose of the decision on a court that has already been taking place. We've been at court for 2.5 years, okay? So every paper filed in one court under one number is going to be filed in the same court but under a different number, which will have a common law number that we have chosen and decided. It's on the top of our paper. And then we're going to push for enforcement. We're going to start making a lot of decisions on a lot of cases. And they'll be rock-solid cases, rock-solid decisions. We'll explain them very carefully and clearly on by what authority and what are the authority to be able to do these things, and also using our Constitution for enforcement for these people, because they have denied due process, they have taken us into jurisdictions unknown, they have concealed all courts of record, they don't exist anywhere, but we have one, and we're going to push it. And we're pushing the president. Look, the president's been doing the right thing since he's gotten office. We've been copying him. He's going to get a copy of this case. Let's see if he's going to do something a little more. Maybe not in the beginning, but hopefully as time goes on, he's going to be behind us. So we'll see what happens. But it's up to the people. Either the people get the backbone themselves to step up and say, we're taking our country back. Okay?
Well, the majority of people, if they get forced with a court issue,
we don't need majority. We have government by the majority that participates. decisions and all this stuff is made by a small group of people. We can become that small group of people and overpower their numbers. All we have to do is step up. We've got the law on our side. We've got history on our side. We have our founding papers on our side. We have the words of our founding fathers. We have the natural law court on our side. We have unalienable right to a natural law court decided by a jury of 12 of our peers, we the people. All of this is a right. They can't deny any of it. And they deny it because people have allowed it.
Right. And the jury was originally 25. And that's been
25 is what the grand jury is, absolutely.
Yeah, and it's brought down to 12. And
no, well, that's because they're all statutory and they're not real. Everything. Look, they have a serious problem also, because once the word gets out, there's a lot of people that are in jail that may probably even belong in jail, okay? But they couldn't even do those trials right. Why couldn't they just do them right? They all got to be done all over. If the people want a new trial, they're going to have to give it to them. That's a problem. And I don't know any easy solution for that.
No, well, and like I said, you know, it's all changed, and you're playing in their sandbox. And as long as
we're not, but we are not in their sandbox. We have not been since we started this. We have made that clear. It doesn't matter what they do. It doesn't matter what they say. It doesn't matter where they push our paper or what stamp they put on it. We're clear on what we say in our papers, and we move on. All that proves their guilt, proves that they have abrogated the common law and have concealed a court of record, a court of, it's been concealed. There's no way. We got the paperwork to show there's no way to open a court of record. It doesn't exist. They only have civil courts and criminal courts. It has nothing to do with a court of law. Nothing.
Well, but the common person is still getting the ramrod and down the road by the court.
Right. And they're going to continue to get it until we take it back.
Right. And as long as you know, and you have a jury of 12, which is not supposed to be correct, and then you also have women on the jury, which is not supposed to be correct. That is not.
Well, I would disagree with that. That might have been a thing, you know, of culture back when, but that's no longer a thing of culture today. You know, so I would not knock women off of that. I think that would be a problem, and it would be a huge problem. But nevertheless, we've come in numbers. You know, our jury, okay, our tribunal is more than 12. Our tribunal is in the thousands. We're from every state across this nation, okay? So we're coming in with great numbers. We're just not a couple of people here in the corner of the state here in New York State. We're in every state of the union. We have visited every single county in the nation over the past 6 years, 5 years since we've been doing this. Let's see, 13, 5, 6, 7, 8, 6 years we've been doing this. And we've gone to every state. We've got people all over the United States. And they are all part of the grand jury. When we call a grand jury, whoever comes. And, you know, we've had as much as 200 people, and we've had as little as maybe 80 or 60 people come to a grand jury call. And we use the whole thing, even though it's only 25. But this is huge, because this is national. This affects every state. And we have to have every state represented. And we have formed a unified a common law grand jury in every single state. All 50 states have unified them. They're unified. And then those juries came together as a unified United States common law grand jury, so we can speak with one voice and we can get the job done. But, you know, again, the picture here, the point that National Liberty Alliance makes on this whole process that we've created with these juries, at some point in time, look at the grand jury can only be in session as long as the business is at hand or the crime is at hand. We have subversion from enemies, both foreign and domestic. And until we bring that under control, this grand jury will stay seated and continue to go forward. Now, once it's done and we gain back control of the federal courts, then we have to establish the administration in every county, which is what we're planning to do and preparing for right now. People are becoming educated to take those positions in the counties. And once they take those positions, then the people will orientate the juries. And then they will be responsible for whatever cases go through within their counties. And you know, they must increase, and National Liberty Alliance or the Unified United States Common Law Grand Jury must decrease and pass the power over to the grassroots where it belongs. And then, of course, National Liberty Alliance will always be here to continue to train people and to teach people the law and the process and the procedure and put forth the handbook and put the courses up to qualify the people to take these positions or even just for people to learn and to be here as advisors in situations. And we're writing a handbook so that people will know how to go through these processes. But it'll be controlled on the grassroots. This is a grassroots people movement. And people need to get behind it.
Yeah, well, and you know, and this country's been blessed because they followed God's law, and God's law has paid off very well. And then they got away from it, and you got, if you don't follow God's law, 100%, you're not going to get the blessing. And that's some of the things when you stay in their sandbox, it's really hard to get done. And I'm glad.
Amen. And God's law is the Constitution. Why is God's law the Constitution? That's
right.
The Constitution is God's law. Why? Because we came under His wing. We received the blessings of liberty from Him. We acknowledge Him as God to be under His law. And we have the unalienable right to control our government, to write a constitution to control that government. So that is God's law. It's the law of the land. And also, when it comes to the people going into a courtroom, the government does not belong there, with the exception of an administrator called a magistrate, in order to put the seal and the signature and to certify. They're there to, it's like going to a notary. You can get a notary public to sit on the stand. If you get the sheriff to sit there, you can get the coroner to sit there. There's numerous people that can sit in that position. And they're not to make any decisions. They're not to make any orders. They're to look to the will of the jury. But the jury must be somewhat educated and guided. And that's where the administrations come from. We have to empower the people to do what they got to do. And it's not really a difficult thing for the people, because really it's all about the facts to begin with. We get 6 to 8 hours to orientate a jury on one day. And if we need more, I guess we can push for more, but that's probably the norm. One day they come in for orientation. Okay? And we will train them in the important things, the honor, the mercy, and the justice that they have to consider, the oath that they have to take, that they will go forward with a sense of honor, justice, and mercy in their decision-making. The fact that the judge can't tell them anything. There is no judge there. No one says anything. You guys decide what's going on, what needs to be done, what's wrong. You decide how to fix the injured party. You decide what's right and wrong. And that's the people's job. And that's that, you know, we can't have liberty until we get maturity. And maturity means to step up and take control, to take the authority. Exercise our unalienable right of controlling our own destiny by deciding
the government's consent. All a jury needs to know is what the Constitution is, and most people know right from wrong. And
yeah,
no,
that's
judge,
all it is. It's in the heart.
Yeah, no lawyer, nobody can tell them that, and they need to step up.
Don't need that. Yep.
Yeah, and not listen to those
now,
people.
A person has a right to counsel, and it doesn't mean there has to be a bar attorney or even any kind of an attorney. It could be someone who's just self-educated as a counselor. They have a right to counsel. But, you know, the people have to get up and talk in the courtroom. A lawyer can't get up there and plead the case for the person to lay out the facts of the case. No, it's up to the witnesses to do that, okay? And, you know, the lawyer can call the witnesses and so on and so forth, but the court case will operate a lot different than the court cases than equity, because equity runs according to statutes, and whereas a court of law runs according to the facts. We just want the facts. What happened? What took place? What's going on here? Who was a witness?
As long as God's laws are followed as we move forward, it'll be blessed and it'll work.
Honor, justice, and mercy. That's God's law. All right, we've only got a few more minutes, and I got two callers, and I do want to try to get them both in. So let me move to the next caller. Thanks, Kurt. Okay, Missouri, not sure your name, how to pronounce that name. Asula? Asulu? Didn't I bring that? Wasn't you up before? Maybe you came back in? From Missouri, you got the mic. Okay, we'll go to the next caller. One more time for Missouri, 913 area code. Okay, let's go to New Jersey. You got the mic. Who's calling? Is that Terry?
Yeah, from New Jersey.
How you doing?
Good.
How you doing,
Terry? I had a question regarding the joining of the cases. As a practical matter, I think you want us to put these actions in a form of an affidavit. And I'm wondering how many pages, because, I mean, I have a whole blog. I mean, my thing would be like 50 pages. I put a link in there. I don't know if that's acceptable. How many pages should we limit our...
You need to talk to Jim. Look, the case is very simple, okay? When we join a case, the case is very simple to join because we're focusing in on jurisdiction and lack of due process. Those are the two key points. You know, in the federal court doesn't have the ability, authority, the jurisdiction to hear a case within a state of what, you know, whatever your case is about. The federal court does not have the authority to hear that. That belongs in the state court. But if that state court is not giving you a court of record, if you are filing and you're dealing in that court, they carry you away into jurisdictions unknown. If there's statutes involved, they carry you away to jurisdictions unknown. Okay, so if they're operating under statutes, okay, then they're not operating under a court that can give you due process. So we get them for not having jurisdiction and not having due process, and any damages done by that Nisi Prius, de facto fictional court operating under equity, whatever damages they have done, they got to repair. And if it gets to the point of coming into the federal case, not only do they have to repair, they have to also pay some damages to the individual, you know, as far not just to restore them, but also to repair their injury, for their injury. So if they really have a case against you, bring it into a natural law court where it begins. If it's a criminal thing that they think they have, go get an untainted grand jury. Don't bring statute to them. Get your indictment. Bring them into a court where the people decide. Okay? And if you can't do that, then don't do nothing. That's why they have these courts, because they can't do it any other way. They're just abusing and fleecing the people. That's all they're doing. So.
Okay, but as a practical matter, you know, how many pages should your affidavit be? Because I know
We just want kind of a synopsis. Talk to Jim. Get in touch with Jim at you know, intake. He'll go through the process with you and what we need. All right?
Okay. One other thing.
And we're making it very, very simple. Remember, a federal court can only hear cases that deal with a constitutional issue. So if any of your unalienable rights was affected, then the court has the authority and the duty to repair that situation. And clearly, the court you're in, I haven't seen a court of record. I've never seen one. I've opened lots of them, but I've never seen it come to fruition.
Okay,
we got one other caller. You go ahead.
Take that call. I'll call you back next week.
Okay, thanks, Terry. Okay, last caller for the night, David from Kentucky. You got the mic. We'll go a few minutes.
Yes,
David.
There.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, so, so it's a simple question. I don't want to keep anybody, but are you guys in joining or allowing cases involving the IRS?
Absolutely.
Great. Good to hear. So. I'll get over to Jordan.
That's a federal issue. We can deal with that one straight on.
Yeah. Well, okay.
Get a hold of Jim. Jim at intake, you know, at National Liberty. Just go to intake at nationallibertyalliance.org. Just send Jim a message through intake and start communicating with him. He'll help you.
Okay. Sounds great.
Okay. Thank you.
Right,
okay, we've come to the end of our program. We will be back next Monday, Lord willing, and we'll pick up on the second part. And again, just to reiterate, we do plan on filing these papers either Wednesday or Thursday, and we will then you know, get the people who are sending papers out to the different, you know, districts and governors and so on. We'll get that information out to them probably on Thursday. We'll start in high gear. Jan's already preparing the people for that and getting things together on that and getting information out. But again, until we get that paper up there, you know, we'll send it out once that's done. We'll let everyone know. Okay. Part two next week. Thanks. Good night, everybody.